It's time for Mac Break Weekly. The full panel is here. Renee, Richie, Andy, Inako, and yes, Alex Lindsay. We'll talk about the new iTunes and a whole lot more. Mac Break Weekly is next.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Mac Break Weekly is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Mac Break Weekly, episode 328, recorded December 4th, 2012. The thinnest iTunes ever. Mac Break Weekly is brought to you by Ford, featuring Bliss, the blind spot information system with cross-traffic alert, and Active Park Assist. Check out these available features on the 2013 Ford Fusion and the 2013 Ford Taurus. Then learn more at Ford.com/technology. And by Squarespace, the fast and easy way to create a high-quality website, blog, or online portfolio. For a free trial and 10% off your first purchase on new accounts, go to Squarespace.com and use the offer code MacBreak12. Don't forget, they recently launched a developer platform for complete code control. And by PDF Pen for iPhone from Smile Software, the latest mobile version of Smile's award-winning PDF editor. Use it to sign a contract, make corrections, fill out an application, and much more. Get it for a limited time for $4.99 on the iTunes App Store now. Learn more at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. And by Hover.com. Hover is the reliable domain name registration and management service that's simple, honest, and easy to use. For exceptional customer support and 10% off your new domain name, go to MacBreak.Hover.com and enter the offer code MacBreak. It's time for Mac Break Weekly, the show that covers everything.
Go start over.
Macintosh. Although on the pre-show, we cover everything but Macintoshes.
Exactly. So that's what we do.
We get it out of our system, so to speak. The team is here. We got Andy Inako joining us from the Chicago Sun-Times. It's snowing in Boston, or at least it is on his iPad.
It's snowing in the Charlie Brown Christmas special. That's so all cute. We need to know.
That's all we need. That's a really festive little display you've got behind you.
It's become like the Charlie Brown Christmas book that has all those like still page animations. That has become like my screensaver, because now I walk back into the office all worried about, geez, I got to get these two articles done. I got to get this column done. Oh, look, it's snowing and they're skating. Oh, things aren't so bad.
Da, 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 da. Also with us from Canada, from his home in Montreal, Mr. Rene Ritchie of iMore.com. Rene, good to see you.
Good to see you too, Leo. And I finally got my iPad mini, so I believe that I fit in now.
Ooh, look at that. You fell for the smart cover, didn't you?
I ordered it to come with it because I didn't have anything else, yeah. And I know I would drop it almost immediately.
Yeah. Yeah. That's good. No, you need a cover, but boy, it's a terrible cover.
It's an unsmart cover. It's a dumb cover.
It's floppy.
Yeah.
But as we talked about, I think last episode, it's all about geometry. But it's not an equilateral triangle when you prop it up.
Yes.
That is Mr. Euclid here, is Alex Lindsay of the Pixel Core. In 2 weeks running, this is awesome.
It's crazy, isn't it?
He's here to help me with my new grill.
That's all about.
Big green egg.
Which size did you get?
Well, you told me to get the extra large.
No, I said not to get the extra large.
No, good. I got the large. They had it in stock, so I just threw it in the back.
The extra large is hard to build.
The thing is heavy.
It is.
It's hundreds of pounds.
Did you get the table with it?
I didn't get the table. I got what they call a Nest. Yeah. So this is a grill, folks, that is actually a modernized version of a Japanese Kamado cooker. So it's a ceramic egg.
Many people ask, why are we talking about this on Mac Break? And the answer is, this is the Mac of grills.
It is truly.
That's it. If Apple would make a grill, like if Apple decided they wanted to get into grilling, they would just buy a Big Green Egg. They would purchase them and say, "There's nothing else we need to do."
That's the one I got on the screen.
The table
right
is
now.
Really nice, by the way.
I know. I want to get the table.
Analogy too. That's a perfect analogy because it too doesn't have a DVD drive.
Hey, but it's simple, it's effective, and it has a crazy rabid base.
You know, to back this up,
and it's expensive.
Yeah. Half the chat room apparently has one, and I never knew this.
Yeah. They're all going, oh, yeah, I got one of those.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Have you seen the App Store?
You know, the best thing on a Big Green Egg is a beer butt chicken. You take
okay.
a can of beer, half yeah. a can of beer, shove yeah. it up the back of a chicken.
In the can?
No, you can actually get, if you go to Amazon, you get a stainless steel can. And
the best thing you get in a big green egg is a big old beer butt chicken.
I'm all you leave it in there for an hour?
If you got an egg, you got to get yourself a beer butt chicken.
It's all about the beer butt chicken.
It's a song.
See, look, people are already saying that's the best.
The country song just writes itself.
It's all about the beer butt.
Yeah, the ukulele. Do it, pro.
I need a steel guitar. Hey, that means I can expense a steel guitar now. Awesome.
I'll be asking you about the beer butt chicken after the show because I don't want to get lynched. But you know, there isn't a whole lot of Apple news today. But we could talk about, I guess, the big news, which is Thursday at the very last possible minute, Apple pushed out iTunes 11. They said it would come out first in October. Didn't change their minds, which is fine. I don't want them to ship it until it's ready. But then they said we'll have it in November, and they did it in November 29th or 30th. I mean, the last possible day. So you guys have had a week to play with it. What do you think? It's very iOS-y.
That's fine.
Yeah, I'm still getting used to it. I mean, the good news is that if you're really put off by the new user interface, so the big deal is that it's a one window interface for pretty much everything. If you're put off by that, you can go into the view menu and put the sidebar back in and put all these other previous version elements right back in. I'm trying not to do that until I absolutely feel as though there's no alternative, because it's such a difference between what you've done
before. The new iTunes is a completely redesigned player, a new store, and includes even more iCloud.
Thank you.
Yes.
Now you may continue.
No.
That's exactly
right. Because now, like, we're kind of like dogs who are like, know like what kind of tone of voice means we're about to get hit.
Yeah.
And it's that those Apple, a brand new, wonderfully upgraded experience for our finest Mac product ever. Oh no! They took away something that makes my life.
It's the thinnest iTunes ever.
Yeah. I mean, the only feature that I love the pop-up player. I love the ability to just scan, to put something in shuffle mode and just scan ahead. Oh, I hate that song. Please don't play that one. But the thing that I'm really missing immediately is the ability to have a playlist open in a separate window and keep it open for like maintenance. Because there's so many times you're putting together a playlist for a trip, or you're maintaining one of your many awesome playlists you use for your daily walks and stuff like that. And it's not really I'm going to sit down, I'm going to focus for 5 minutes, I'm going to get this thing done and knock this out. It's often I'm just going to keep this open so that whenever I encounter a song that's appropriate for this playlist, I'm going to drag it in there. So now that is no more, but oh well.
It's inevitable. Anytime they make a change, it's inevitable that the first reaction is going to be, oh, right?
Right, exactly.
So
I think people should stick with it before they decide to sort of re-roll it back to the way it was before.
Yeah, Zephyr in our chat room said, I immediately turned the sidebar on. When you turn the sidebar on, it's much more like the old iTunes, right?
It's kind of weird. Yeah. The whole thing is more like lion than mountain lion. It's like the transition between the old iTunes and the new iTunes. And they gave it a nice new coat of paint, but they didn't really re-engineer it that much. And there's a lot of really confusing choices. Like, you minimize the window on the right, but then you have to maximize it again on the left. And you have searchable dropdowns, but then they have popovers in the popovers. And there's just a lot of stuff that looks like it could have used a couple months or maybe one more iteration of polish before it was sane.
Yeah.
Popovers within popovers. It sounds like beer butt chicken. What I mean, that's a little bit too...
Well, you have to get the accessory steamer for the top of the egg.
John Gruber, as one might expect, is my first impression of the new design, impressed, but he does point out it's a redesign, not a rewrite. And I think what we all wanted was, frankly, something faster and smoother.
Yeah. I have to admit, I just don't use it that often anymore.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's not enough to get me to use it again. Let's put it
that
way. Yeah.
I guess most of my experience is now on my iPad or my iPhone, and I just don't like it enough that it to come back. So I don't use it very often anymore.
And I just find the iPad version kind of inadequate for really managing a music library and putting together those playlists and stuff. So it's a bit more of a struggle for people like me who are doing stuff like that. But there are a lot of really nice common sense features that have been added in. Fairly recently, they've extended the duration of the previews in the iTunes Store from 30 seconds usually down to a minute and a half. And so now if you are previewing a song and you navigate away, unless you're just clicking to another song on the playlist, it doesn't automatically stop the playback of the sample you're listening to. It'll keep playing through the end until you actually ask for another sample. So those are little things that, okay, that makes sense. That actually makes the product better. I like that.
And I have to admit, I pretty much use Spotify almost exclusively for playlists. So, I mean, if I listen to specific things, I'm listening to it on iTunes if it's not in Spotify. But iTunes, I think it's probably why I don't think about the playlist that much.
Yeah.
Mm. There's a lot of nice new auto-magicalness as well now. If you start dragging a song, a sidebar will pop up and let you just drag it into a playlist. And
that's
there's
nice.
Next up, so that if you're playing music, you can add a song to this almost secondary stage area, and that'll play next without destroying whatever you're playing now or your playlist that you're on now. So there is a lot of good stuff in there, too.
Yeah. Although I'm kind of one step back was that they got rid of CoverFlow, which was kind of cool, but I didn't really use it. But the thing that I really wish they hadn't copied away from the iPad was where the sort of the default view is now a grid of album art, which isn't really useful for me because I buy, you know, a couple of tracks here, a couple of tracks there. I don't even associate with the image that's on the album. And by making the album title shrink to fit the dimensions of that spot in the grid, I really don't know what the name of that album is either. So it's like, for me, it's giving me this view of my collection that doesn't give me any useful information, but it just does. It reminds me of what Sly Stone looked like in 1971. But other than that, I don't know anything useful that can apply.
He wants it's to also take nice you though, higher.
You tap on an album and the whole thing opens up like a folder in iOS, and you have all the songs inside. And they do this color algorithm where they match the album art and paint the background that color. So it's almost like you still have the right click if you want to get, you know, nerdy about it, but then you also have all these things that are very more accessible to people who maybe aren't as familiar with the Mac or iOS or iTunes to begin with.
And let me say something that might be slightly incendiary. I liked it a lot more when, acting on a hunch about what I was reacting to, I installed it on my Samsung multi-touch Windows 8 slate. And I think that iTunes 11 would work better on a multi-touch device than on anything else, because the targets are, it seems to be more laid out for a touch system than for a keyboard system.
Do we think that's by accident?
It's got big touch targets.
I don't think that's by accident at all. I think that, I mean, Alex, you're the one who keeps saying that sometime in the next X years, with X number, X greater than 2, we're going to see like a merging of the desktop and the mobile operating system. I'm wondering if this isn't part of a larger little, just in the back of Apple's mind, there's always, if there's a way to redesign something so that it would work better as a multi-touch thing, or at the very least, make it look more consistent with the iOS counterpart, because people's first interface into computing these days is the touchscreen on their phone, not on the desktop, not on a notebook anymore. That maybe that's part of in the back of my mind, let's make sure this will work on a tablet.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, I still think that the progression is going to be touchscreen laptops and then just touchscreen, you know, and the, you know, more something that you can decide if you want a keyboard on it. But I think that I'd wager that's one of the requirements for Apple stuff now is that it has to be leaning that direction.
I would suggest if you have a VNC client on your iPad, try operating it, run iTunes 11 on your desktop, but use it via VNC on your iPad where you're actually touching things. And I think, okay, now I like this a lot more than I did when I was trying to use it with a trackpad.
And even all the navigation has changed. There used to be those little gumdrop to make it small or large or to close it, and those became traffic lights in the last version of iTunes, and now they're gone, and there's a big X button instead, which is a really huge X button. And I did the same thing. I loaded it up in Screens on the iPad, and I played with it, and it worked. The old one was almost unusable, and the new one is highly workable.
Dare I ask how it works on Windows? Does anybody here use Windows? Because one of the problems I keep running into is, and I don't use iTunes even on the Mac really very much. I mean, I have to a little bit, but I use it as little as I can. I keep it running in the background so I can access it, you know, via my Apple TV. But I hear from people all the time who use Windows who say, "Oh."
When I used it on Windows this weekend, that was the first time I've used iTunes on Windows, probably in like 2 or 3 years. It was interesting to use it on a true multi-touch tablet because it did make a lot more sense. I don't see that there's any real advantage to using on Windows versus Mac though. It is, I mean, it really is the exact same app on both platforms.
It's the same. And not improve particularly in performance.
It's revenge for Office Mac is basically
that's what I think. You know, that's a really apt analogy. As Office is to the Mac, iTunes is to Windows. You know, Microsoft refused to use Apple's memory management or do anything Apple-like at all. And I have a feeling, you know, that iTunes on Windows is pretty much a Mac experience in a box on Windows, you know.
They've got to wrap up core audio and all car animation and port all that stuff over to Windows the same way Microsoft has to wrap up all those DLLs. And
do you think
they
got to
make it work?
Yeah, I guess you do. Yeah. Lori in our chat room, Lori79, says iTunes 11 crashed on me about 5 times on Windows before I got it to work. That's 5 is average. You can go anywhere from 2 to 12. So you're right in the middle there. I think that's good. Downloads are slow under Windows. A lot of people are saying it's crashing. I think, you know, part of the problem is QuickTime on Windows often is problematic as well.
I find Windows to be problematic.
That could be too. That could be too.
There's so many options. There's so many ways for a Windows machine to crash. That you know, it's my Mac crashes as well. I mean, you know, but I have this, you know, there's just a lot of, when I have to go home and fix my dad's PC, I'm reminded why I use a Mac.
Yeah.
You know, if you have an iOS device, you don't have to use iTunes. You can use iCloud. But if you have a traditional iPod, like a Nano or a Shuffle or a Classic, you're locked to iTunes.
Yeah. But that brings up a good point, Renee. Though, of course, this is also the iTunes came around the same time that the new iMac came in. And what really, really sold me on iTunes 11 was this thing where I had to reflect upon the fact that this computer in front of me right now was in Styrofoam 10 minutes ago. And right now it's telling me your library has 5,312 tracks in it and all my playlists are there. And I click on a playlist, and after only about a 12-second delay, all that music starts playing. Okay, maybe that's a good maybe that's a salvageable feature of iTunes 11. The cloud integration, making it look as good as having 130 gigabytes worth of music actually on that hard drive.
That part's fantastic.
One of our chatters, G. Bilton, Greg Bilton, says that it's booted faster, much faster for him on iTunes 11 on Windows than iTunes 10 did. So that's good.
And I think that the big thing with Windows, it'll be the mileage varies. And as with Macs, where if you have a newer computer, I bet you it's really, really fast. And if you have an older one, it's probably crashing.
I guess there's – and then the next question I have is, do you have to upgrade? Could you, if you said, oh, I don't want to go through this, could you stay with iTunes 10 on Windows or Mac? Is there a compelling, has Apple done anything yet that says, oh, you got to have this? You probably not can't to, update anything.
Not to me. I think I'd be, if I had 2 Macs, I think I would definitely be keeping iTunes 10 on my main Mac and iTunes 11 on something that I don't use quite so often.
Right.
I did the opposite. But it does say on the new iOS devices that they require iTunes 11. But because iTunes 11 wasn't available when they came out, they worked fine with iTunes 10.
Yeah.
You can redeem one hot feature. You can redeem gift cards by putting it in front of the computer's camera.
That actually is pretty cool.
Yes.
I don't know.
That's a cool idea. I just don't give away that many. I just don't give it. No, it is.
Is it?
I did think it's a pain in the neck.
Okay.
It's so delicious library.
It's delicious library. Is that still around? That was the cool thing about Delicious Library. You'd scan your VHS tape barcodes.
Right.
Now you go into an Apple store and you can scan stuff and buy it with the iPhone camera. I mean, Apple's getting into that, obviously.
That's good.
Also,
That's good. Variable cost iTunes gift cards. As long as we're talking iTunes, we'll do all the iTunes stories, are here. I know. Apple will be selling these at third-party retailers for the holidays. Give any amount from $15 to $500.
I think the only problem with that now is that when you hand it to someone as a gift, they're going to go, wow, he gave me a $500
gift card.
And then it'll be $15, and they'll be like, mismatched expectations.
I'm sorry.
You're a good mailman, but you're not a $500 gift card mailman. I'm sorry, Gus. Exactly.
Is it
you
better?
You can judge your worth by the needle on that card.
Is it better to give a gift card, an iTunes gift card, or cash? Wouldn't you just give them cash and then they could buy whatever they wanted?
Well, because what's great about an iTunes gift card is that you can also one of my gifts to one of my nieces is I make an impression upon her that my taste in music is, of course, by definition, better than hers because I'm older than she is. So she does get the iTunes gift card that I'm sure
is that
she
how she feels about
apps.
It.
I'm sure she does. I try to be a good steward, a good uncle.
Uncle Andy's mixtapes.
No, exactly. So every year I do give her the iTunes gift card that she uses and enjoys. But it also comes with like a playlist of pre-made playlist of, you know, Great Taste in Music Edition 2012 of like all the music that, okay, I'm sure you haven't found this yet. So you're gonna have to sit through at least one Procol Harum. You're gonna need some Diana Domrau. I'm gonna have to insist on a little Bix, just a little. So give them a gift card, but you take the curse off the hide. And I have a pocket full of gifts for people that I didn't remember I had to buy a gift for. So here, you can say, no, I built this playlist exactly for you because I thought they'd be music you would exact. And then use the other $50 for things you will actually enjoy.
Well, see, and I think the important thing is that it's very hard to buy heroin with an iTunes gift card.
So you give it to the addicts in your family.
Yeah, all right.
Enjoy some music.
Don't you always suspect, like, the week after Christmas, you can see who the drunks are, who the drug addicts are. We see someone who's, I got a $100 gift card. I'll sell it for $20 cash.
Well, exactly. This corner. You can use it to buy heroin. It's just not face value. That's all. iTunes event is going to take place in Moskva. Coming up December today.
It's supposed to happen today. I've been looking for the news 4th. To see what actually
and
happened.
And the question is whether iTunes will be rolling out in Russia.
It did yesterday, I believe. I don't think it went 56 new countries yesterday.
A bunch of new countries.
Yeah, it launched 2 hours ago.
So it is in Russia now, too.
Yes.
And they got movies in Russia as well.
Oh, that's good. Because, you know, that's a place where piracy really doesn't exist. I'm just kidding.
I would like to point out that most albums offered on iTunes in Russia cost between 99 rubles and 149. That's $3.20 to $4.80.
Oh, that's expensive.
So it's much cheap. Well, but it's much cheaper than here.
Well, no. Yeah. Oh, the whole album.
The whole album.
Oh.
Because they're fighting the street vendor selling the illegitimate copy outside on the sidewalk.
Go street vendor. Go street vendor. Can we get more of those here? Lower the price.
Actually, I'm sure that this is a common American point of view that somehow, you know, piracy is rampant in Russia. I would guess, if you really looked at it, there's probably more piracy in the U.S. than any country in the world. It's just kind of
endemic. It's more visible in other countries.
Well, but I mean, like
it's more visible because they have a carpet out in the Red Square.
I remember leaving movie theaters in Hong Kong, coming in front of the movie theater and being able to buy the movie I just saw in the theater.
And why don't they do that here? Like, you walk out of Skyfall and go, that was awesome. Here, buy the DVD.
They should do that. They should sell DVDs in the lobby.
They have that $35,000 machine that's bio-coded to you that you can watch the movie for $500 when it comes out in the theater. We don't need DVDs.
Really?
Yeah.
Mm. Wait a minute. I'm trying to think. Is that a joke?
No, they announced that last week. It's a $35,000 box that goes in your living room, and it's uses biometrics to make sure it's only you that can access it.
What?
And then you can watch first-run movies for $500 a pop.
I'm trying to think of who the market is for that.
Very rich people.
Do you spend $35,000, or do they subsidize that?
No, you buy the projector or whatever it's called for $35,000.
So this is for Shaquille O'Neal.
Yeah. Who would be mobbed if they went to the theater
your house and acted out?
I see what it is. I see what it is. That makes sense. So it's for people who, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen or George Clooney, who couldn't go to a movie theater and enjoy movies. So Bruce, George, you got the money. Buy a $35,000 iris scanner.
Or if just people who just don't want to mix.
It's almost the price of the Coke in the theater anyway. So
wouldn't it be weird, though? I mean, do you want to watch a movie tonight? What do you want to watch?
Well, $500? There are some people that have little theaters in their house.
Yeah.
You know, and that are very nice. Not me. But I wish. I have dreams.
They have a little theater.
I dream of big theaters.
Alex is traveling and his wife can't access it because her thumbprint is different. And
Is it thumbprint or
well,
iris?
What's funny is in Africa, you can't
iris,
even,
yeah.
In Africa, you can't even buy a legitimate DVD because the illegal trade is so high, it's so rampant that... But when you stop at a stoplight, there's guys walking around with these little like DVDs all flared out. They're like literally, it's like the ones that were released like 3 days ago. But of course, when you buy them, it's at a guy shooting at an angle in Hong Kong with Hong Kong subtitles.
So, folks, when you complain about the fact that The Hobbit, I just bought tickets to see The Hobbit. By the way, you can join us if you'd like. I got a group of 20 going, but it's a week after it opens. You probably want to go opening night.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, that's the thing. I knew that this would be a bad idea. December 21st. We're going down to the IMAX, 48 FPS IMAX down in San Francisco, because I think that's how you should see The Hobbit.
Double frame rate.
Double frame rate. Yeah, but it's like $17 for a ticket. But that's cheap compared to 500.
It's like you're seeing the movie twice because it's double the frame rate.
I got tickets for Sunday for the same thing.
Yeah, I want to see it like as Peter Jackson intended.
the only scary thing is
J.R.R. Tolkien intended it.
They've been having to explain to people. There's actually a lot of trouble. There's complaints about this. A lot of the early views, a lot of this has to do with the number of times it's flashing. So in a standard 24 FPS, they flash it three times, between right and left to make sure that you don't see any of the 3D artifacts.
Oh.
And this one, I think they're only flashing it once or twice. And people are starting to say that
they could see the spirit gun behind Gandalf's ear.
Is it going to be like Max Headroom when the blip fart makes your head explode? That's my only real concern.
Supposedly... Peter Jackson says this makes you less sick than 28 frames per
second. And the reports that people are seeing is this is the first time it's ever been done, and that the flash rate may be too low. And so what we're actually getting is not enough, and you're actually seeing more 3D artifacts than you saw before. So the technology may not be completely sorted out, but we'll find out, won't we?
Well, we'll find out on December 21st.
I'm going to watch it in 2D so that I can enjoy the story.
Yeah,
and then I'm going to watch it in 3D so I can see what it actually.
That's kind of my preference. I really is there a 2D? Can you go see it in 2D?
Yeah, there's a 2D version.
Yeah,
I like 3D for certain things. I think it's really cool to experience the world. Like I think that there are really I have a 3D camera that I shoot stuff with, and I really enjoy that. I don't like it for movies.
Apple's iTunes, according to Bloomberg. Would be one of the world's biggest media companies if it were just by itself. Apple's media storefronts took in more than $8.5 billion in their fiscal year that ended in September. $8.5 billion through that's music, movies, TVs. But put $8.5 billion. That's more money than Warner Brothers, Time Magazine, The New York Times, Simon & Schuster combined.
I think Apple should... I think that there is a movement, and I think that I'm kind of surprised. I think that now that Steve Jobs is not there. I think Steve Jobs, in my opinion, pandered too much to the... To Hollywood. I don't think he had
in
to.
In his era, he had to kiss butt.
But I think Apple... I mean, I think what we're seeing with Netflix and with YouTube is... And not yet with Amazon, but we're seeing some fairly aggressive moves to, if you're not going to license your content, we're going to create our own. We're going to pay for Netflix. I mean, YouTube this last week, opened a 40,000 square foot facility in LA to support that.
I know. You know one of the people running that?
Eileen
Rivera.
Yeah. So, I think that's a great example, and all one of the shows that's actually on YouTube is right around the corner.
Sword and Laser
In our studios. So the point is that I think YouTube going down the direction, Netflix getting their own content. If Apple spent funded a blockbuster every week. Every week, every month. Every month.
They can afford it.
It would be like
a blockbuster.
Noise.
$200 million?
$100 million. Let's just say $100 million.
They spent $100 million on a small blockbuster.
Made it iTunes only releases, that are shot, and maybe they just do artsy ones and they're only $20 million. It doesn't matter. It'd be like noise to them. But I think that it increases their leverage with Hollywood to show that they could come right into there. It'd be the same people. Remember,
they wouldn't
get the directors. They would just be the same directors that everybody else has. They would just be fun. They would just be another media company, another funding company. Because, Warner Brothers and Paramount, they're not movie companies. They're banks. And the thing is that they're banks that fund other people's ideas. And Apple could fund those just as easily and make them exclusively iTunes.
Well, I don't think that'd be that easy.
Why?
I think... Why? Because how much money does Hollywood spend developing every single script that isn't produced for all them for each one that they actually produce? How many movies do they actually make that lose money before they find one that actually makes money?
But the crazy thing is Apple doesn't need to necessarily make money at it. You know, the thing is
they do. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they do. Let's bring our guest from Apple who says whether or not they expect to get something back for the $20 million they spend for a low budget movie.
But the thing is that the issue though is that Apple, if you are underlying the platform that they're building, it could be seen as marketing cost.
I think
that's the issue.
I'm with you if they were to look at the way that, of course, we have to mention Louis C.K. If the way that he does it, the way that he's done his career, where he accepted less money from FX Network because they gave him complete control. He accepted more trouble and more upfront money he had to spend out of his pocket to release his concert movie himself because it gave him all the control and the money. If Apple were to essentially say the exact same thing, like if they were able to do for actor producers what HBO is kind of able to do, where they say, "Hi, you're 52 years old, which means that Hollywood is not good, doesn't think that you're a bankable, openable actor anymore. We will give you $40 million to act, produce, and star in your own movie. We, of course, are interested in building up content less than making money. So you will essentially take one out of every $2 that this takes in. And whereas Hollywood will tell you that all the Star Wars movies have yet to turn a dollar in profit, so we can't pay off any of our profits, we will actually open our books to you so that if this generated $10 million in revenue, you will actually receive a check from us for $5 million. Talk to all of our developers. When they make money, we make money. When 30%. We make money, we give the money to them. That would actually work. I don't think what you're fighting against, though, is the fact that all these stars, remember that 20 years ago, the idea of a movie star doing television, every one of their managers and agents would say, no, because once you start doing television, you have announced to the world that you are now off of the A-list. You're no longer a movie actor. You are television actor. And it took a whole generation for that to burn off, to realize that, well, actually, no, I'm Steve Buscemi. I am acting at the top of my game, and this series I'm on HBO has increased my profile by fivefold.
Do you think the fact that Kevin Spacey's going to produce and act in a series for Netflix shows that that's a little different?
Kevin Spacey is different because he has not had a great career for the past 10 years.
Yeah, I guess so.
Which is not to say that it's a desperation move, but it means that he's probably more receptive to interesting ideas like this. The moment that Tom Cruise says that, I have this really cool historical drama that I really, really want to do, but even Tom Cruise cannot get this movie made, I will take 6 weeks off to shoot and film this, and we will release this direct on iTunes. That will cause a lot of heads to turn, because one of those great podcasts, the writer of The Usual Suspects, Chris McQuarrie, was talking about how really it is, once you get the right director on board, then you're kind of made as a screenwriter, because the actors, the A-list actors, the first question they ask is,
who's
going to be directing this? Because I want to work with these great directors. So if they were to get the right director between jobs, this would be really, really interesting. That has happened before. There are all kinds of, like, Scorsese has done music videos, he's done commercials, he's done TV shows, because he's got, you know, maybe 5 or 6 months of downtime between projects. This shoot will only take him about 3 or 4 weeks, and he likes to work. So it's. I don't think they would. Apple could ever succeed at this by trying to be a studio. But if they were to simply try to be the company that does for creative content what they also do for software developers, saying we will take the money, we will give you a predictable percentage of every single dollar that you make, and we will give you some hassle about what constitutes the shape of a button, but still. So long as your movie does not act as a flashlight.
You can do that now. I mean, there are clearinghouses right now that will let you. I mean, like, there's basically, in the same way that CD Baby works, there are independent groups that if you want to put your film onto iTunes, you know, you can get it onto iTunes and get your 70%. Well, they get your 70%, and then you split that with them, and I don't know how that split works. So it's possible to get stuff onto iTunes right now.
It's not CD Baby. It's somebody like that?
It's like someone. I can't think of the name of it, but there's some independent.
It's interesting.
You know, there are ways to get your stuff onto iTunes right now. What Apple doesn't want to do is be writing $10 checks to 20,000 people.
Right.
So they want someone else to act as the mediator for that.
Makes sense.
But I think that the opportunity for Apple, though, is a focused effort to show that filmmakers could make money doing this directly. And I think that in many ways, the way YouTube is, Netflix is investing directly, I think that there are ways to prove that model. And I think that Apple stands to lose ground to those two players if they don't. They have the money to do it. They have people who are much more likely to pay connected to their system. They have all the pieces in place to make that work. And I think that, you know, it would make a lot of sense. And it doesn't have to be a $100 million movie. It could be a lot of $20 million movies or $10 million movies or $5 million movies that are only available on iTunes that are specifically going down that path. And it doesn't mean, you know, Apple stirring that pot, priming that pump, could greatly improve their leverage with Hollywood if they start showing, because the conversations behind the scenes are, you know, this gets a whole lot uglier from here because we've got enough cash to bury you. I mean, as soon as they get two or three hits on iTunes, this whole conversation gets, you know, downright ugly because now you have Hollywood running scared.
You've got so much more experience with Hollywood and showbiz than I do, but also I'm just saying this as a perspective of someone who is asking what might be dumb questions, but it doesn't seem to me that they will have any leverage with Hollywood so long as Hollywood will always have the last Batman movie offered on streaming and offered for digital rental for digital purchase. As long as they will have the Hobbit, so long as they will have the next Transformers, the next Pixar movie. They could say, oh, Apple, you want to be in the movie business? Great. Well, just like we wouldn't really lease out our Disney, we wouldn't lease out our Pixar movies to a competing studio. I don't think we're going to let you have any of our other releases. Well, okay, Disney's a bad example with Apple.
Yeah, but those are definitely marquee products. But there's a lot of other films out there that make money. You look at Argo. Ben Affleck would be the kind of guy that Apple could probably make a deal with.
I could see him doing it.
Ed Burns would be another guy that would probably do. You know, there's a lot of producers out there that have produced a lot of great, content producers and directors that are, they're all, I mean, when you're in Hollywood, everyone's talking about how to survive what's happening. You know, everything is constricting there right now, you know, and everyone's trying to figure out, you know, and everyone knows that online is somehow going to be the future and they can't figure out how to make money with it. If Apple starts dishing out some money and start pushing down that path, it would scare the studios. Because they would see where Apple could go with this, because Apple has, I mean, they're spending as an aggregate, I think the number is $30 to $40 billion a year. That's all of the movie theaters. I mean, the entire movie industry. You know, and so Apple, you know, if Apple decided that they just wanted to lean into this, they don't have to lean very hard before they start losing, and the key is, it's not, what Apple doesn't need to do is it doesn't need to pay for all of it. It needs to create a passage that starts to look profitable. Apple figures that out, like, you know, because I'm the kind of guy that if Skyfall, for instance, came out as an iTunes property and was there, I would much rather watch it at home. I don't want to wait. Yeah, I'd watch it at home. You know, I buy it. I mean, I buy a movie probably once every two or three days at home. You know, and so the thing is that it would be great to have that. Josh Whedon, by the way, it would be another. Josh Whedon would be another person that would be great to,
Let's take a break. We're going to come back with more. Andy Anatko, Alex Lindsay, Renee Ritchie, as somebody on Twitter said, the dream team. And Twitter, you know, is always right. We will have more on Mac Break Weekly in a bit, but first a word from Ford, the Ford Motor Company. Now, that's the Apple of motor cars, if you ask me. Ford is doing some amazing things, and I love it that it's an American car company that is making such great strides in technology. We talked about the lane keeper assist. We talked about the adaptive cruise control. Have you played with Bliss? This is pretty cool. It's called the Blind Spot Information System, Bliss. You've got sensor. This I need. There it is. There's sensors in both vehicle rear quarter panels that scan blind spots to detect traffic. And then you saw the light in the rear view mirror. You get audible and visual alerts saying, hey, there's something. My son is learning to drive right now, just got his permit. We could really use this. Instead of me going, it could just go, ding. You might want to watch your left rear. You can warn drivers of oncoming traffic when you're backing out of a parking space. You know, this happens to me all the time. You're backing out and there's a big van here and there's a truck there. You can't see what's around that corner, but the Bliss can. And I've actually used this, and it's kind of amazing where it goes, yeah, there's slow down. Whoa. They also have Active Park Assist, and I have used this a couple of years ago, and I didn't do so good in it. But you will do better in it. What it does is your drive. So I was driving a Ford Flex, and you drive along. They actually set this up at the test track for me. And you drive along, and it press the button, and it finds you a space. It actually measures the spaces that you're going by. So it can say, yeah, that one will fit. It calculates the trajectory. Yes. And then you just take your hands off the wheel. What you don't do, and what I did, is I took my foot off the brake. So you take your hands off the wheel. It steers the car into place exactly in 24 seconds. You do operate the accelerator, gear selector, and brake pedal. They neglected to tell me that. Because the car, once it's parked, is still in gear.
Right.
You don't just sit there. It backed up slowly into the car.
They thought that it would be nice for you to have a little control.
I don't know what I was thinking. I thought it was going to turn off the car, open the door, and say, "You're here."
Yes,
didn't do that, but it does. Show that video again. For those of you watching on video, it's amazing. If you're not watching on video, you can go to ford.com/technology and see how this stuff works. It is really, really cool. It's available in the 2013 Ford Fusion, my next car. So see, now it says searching, space found, pull forward. And then you put it in drive. You do keep your foot on the accelerator and or brake. And then it's really weird because it spins the wheel around and parks you perfectly, by the way. The way you were taught to do parallel parking but never could really reproduce. Just so. It's also available in the 2013 Ford Taurus. I had it in the Flex, so it's available in some other Fords as well. If you go to your Ford dealer and say, I want to take a look at Bliss and the Active Park Assist, they can show you. Or learn more at ford.com/technology. That was all done by the car. That's so sweet. So sweet. Soon, Stormbringer says, this generation is going to barely know how to tie their shoes. Yeah, you know, as soon as they come up with a self-tying shoe, I'm buying. Wasn't that in Back to the Future? I'm buying it.
I have a self-tying shoe.
Yeah, it's called Velcro.
it's called slip-ons. I don't wear.
Me too.
You spend too much time in an airport and you stop getting laces.
No more laces.
No, I don't. I literally don't have any shoes that have laces.
It's an interesting problem because, you know, Michael, Lisa's son, is 10, and he says, I want to wear lace-up shoes now because he wore Velcro like up until then, mm-hmm. and all the big kids wear lace-up shoes, but he doesn't know how to tie shoes because he's always used Velcro.
Right.
Right? So I got to sit down. Okay, you're in the bow when you're doing it.
I have to think about it now because I haven't done it for years.
Is there a song? See, Canadians have a song. What's the song?
I'm sure it's the same instructions, and you loop the bow and you put it underneath. We just do it to probably the theme of O Canada.
I love it. I want it. Let's see.
Actually, Leo, there was a really interesting story that broke just this afternoon. Netflix has gotten like first run rights to Disney movies starting in 2016.
I saw that. That is huge because I never gave up on Netflix. And people were worried because they lost one of the libraries that they had about that time frame. So they got Disney, huh?
Also starting in 2016, Netflix – this is according to Mashable.com. Starting in 2016, Netflix users will be able to stream first-run Disney movies on their mobile devices, computers, and television.
Ooh.
Also includes direct-to-video new releases. I'm trying to figure – during the commercial, I pinged somebody to try to find out whether they mean actual first-run releases or do they mean
Here's the Reuters story that I'm sure Mashable's just reprinting. Walt Disney Company agreed to give Netflix exclusive TV distribution rights to its movies, becoming the first major studio to stream its movies to TV viewers via Netflix instead of HBO, Showtime, or other premium channels. In other words, HBO and Showtime just lost Disney.
Right.
Netflix won exclusive.
That was expensive.
This is not till 2016. Currently, they have a deal with Stars. That's what they lost.
Yeah,
Netflix
lost Stars.
Yeah. Oh, that's what
Stars
was
like, oops.
Talk about blowback. Holy cow. Oh, you don't want to do a deal? Okay, I understand. We're just going to take your number one property. The deal gives Netflix streaming rights to movies from Disney's live action and animation studios. That includes Pixar.
And Star Wars.
Lucasfilms. Marvel. wow. DreamWorks not included in the deal as that studio distributes through Showtime.
Like, because the last episode before the season finale, Netflix is surrounded by all of its enemies. They're holed up. You know they're going to be dead soon. And then the phone call the next. Oh, it looks like Nucky Thompson pulled one out of the fire again.
So to clarify what you were asking about, Netflix can stream Disney movies beginning 7 to 9 months after theatrical release. That's the same as Starz deal. So it's not right away. It's not first run in the sense that, you know, at the same time as in theater. It does not cover DVD rentals of Disney movies. So it starts 7 to 9 months after theaters, but that's probably 30 days after.
It makes you think a little bit, though, that if Apple were to do like a streaming service, now Netflix has that exclusive, but they would still have the iTunes Store would still have access to rental.
Wow.
But the interpretation that I'm getting from the Reuters article is that if Apple were doing all these behind the scenes deals to get like these streaming content, they would not be able to have that, or at least not before it would be available to video.
Right.
Interesting.
Hmm.
A complicated beast.
Apple still leads Samsung in overall impressions, but Android dominates iOS. With 52%.
Dominates. I think dominates is a big
yeah.
word.
Okay, 52% market share. Can't dominate.
Well, Apple doesn't have 48.
Apple's 31.45%. Yeah. So Apple is up, by the way. I guess that's dominating. That's a big number. Samsung, second place, 21. Samsung alone. We're talking Android, all of Android, but Samsung alone is number 3. So it's Android, Apple, Samsung. 24.5% of all phones. Galaxy S overtook the BlackBerry curve.
Should they feel good about that? I mean,
well, it was like, second place. iPhone's number 1.
Galaxy passed someone who was crawling on the ground.
Yeah, but it was number 2. It was the number 2 phone, right, because of all the
emerging
legacy
markets, right, are huge.
Emerging markets, yeah. Yeah, this includes international. You know, Mary Meeker did her annual state of the whatever, and her state of the whatever was Android dominates globally, but in the U.S., iOS dominates, iPhone dominates. Right. And I think that's probably the accurate way to describe that.
It's a strange relationship because they have the market share, but Apple has the profit share. They have the handset share, but Apple has the web usage and app usage share. There's a very strange dichotomy that exists between people who buy Android devices and people who use iOS devices.
Right.
And I wish these companies would be more clear about how they get their numbers and how they measure them and what they're actually reporting, because it's always nebulous, and the companies that report on these findings always pick the most sensational title possible, and then it makes it very hard to see what they're measuring.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, I talk, it's interesting how those two lines are going to start converging. Every company that sells content through both an Android store and an iTunes store, I'm not talking about just apps, I'm talking about in-app purchases, they won't give me specific numbers, but they tell me that their iOS apps are on a per app basis are more profitable than their Android apps. However, the quantity of Android devices is starting, the numbers are starting to say that the quantity is starting to make up for that lack of profitability per handset. So as these two different graphs of how the Android business and how the iPhone business is going are going to start flattening out and meeting each other, I wonder how far in the future it's going to start to, we're going to find a point which a developer might say, actually, we will probably make more money in total if we get a certain percentage of the total Android market versus if we target this towards iOS first. It's interesting to look at the numbers.
Yeah.
I always think, Andy, if there'd be one of those Marvel what-if comics and Google and Apple had never split up and we had the Apple hardware with all the Google services still, where we'd be today.
Yeah, I think it's something that's it's really fascinating to take a look at all this stuff, because Apple is, I think, next year is going to be an especially interesting year for the iPhone, because I'm wondering how much longer Apple can put all of their iPhone business into one new device a year and say that, I know that market-wise, people want a larger screen than the one you're providing you, but we decided to give you a thinner phone instead. I think there's going to be a moment where Apple's going to have to say, okay, we're going to have to produce two different phones because we're getting so much information about what the market wants out of a handset, and we are the market is now competitive enough that we can no longer simply say that the style, the ecosystem, all the stability of the iOS ecosystem outweighs the fact that maybe people want a larger screen, or maybe people want a phone with a better camera, which now we can't produce because Nokia and other companies are willing to put technologies into their phones that make the phone a little bit thicker, but they give these really cool optical image stabilization features that might not be possible when you try to pack that into a tiny, tiny, thin phone. So it's going to continue to be an interesting year as Apple is now starting to fight against the competitors who can actually punch back.
It's interesting to see if they let Samsung do their market research. You know, like they waited a long time to put out the mini iPad, and now Samsung has a device at every quarter-inch interval, and Apple might just be watching to see which ones are actually the gravitational devices to go towards.
I've actually thought that before, where Samsung steals from the iPhone they steal their design information from Apple. Apple steals marketing information from Samsung. Because I just got this the Galaxy Note 2 last week for testing, and just it's fun to put these next to here. Okay, here's the really big Samsung Galaxy phone. Here's the really small Galaxy phone, and in the middle, here's the one that's a little bit between those two of them. And you look at this and you wonder, Samsung is a big enough company that can afford to do that. They're successful enough that they did a Note 2 instead of just making this a one-off freak product. You know, at what point do you look at this and say, isn't it kind of cool that if I want a really big, a stupid big screen, I can buy one? If I want a really small screen, Samsung will sell me one of those too. They're not telling me I'm stupid for wanting something that's a little bit different from what someone next to me on the plane has.
They're selling that Note 2 pretty well. I think, what did I see? The numbers was like 5 million, 10 million. It's now their number one Android, beating the Galaxy S3. People like big phones, I guess.
I have to admit that last year, the first time I saw one, I thought it was stupid. I thought it was big and dumb and ungainly. I think after this year of having so much experience with 7-inch and 8-inch tablets, it makes more sense to me. It's big enough that it just barely fits in my one-size-fits-all car cradle. But now I can see, when I'm using the Waze app, I can see 20 minutes ahead of me every traffic condition and know if I need to bail out of my current plans or not. And that alone is like, okay, that's not too bad. Reading a full paperback page of text on a pocket-sized device, it's not too bad either. So
just imagine if you went to Best Buy and every size television cost the same amount of money. How many people would go for the biggest television in the store, because it's no longer
bigger,
any money
better.
Barrier for the
benefit. Yeah. I have two Galaxy Note 2s because then I put them together and I can do windowing.
Do you have the one with the Verizon button, Leo? The Verizon button on the front?
No, I just got a Sprint one because I wanted LTE. This was the unlocked European one. I like the big size, and I guess I'm not alone.
Again.
It's selling well. It isn't cheap either. Yeah.
The world's smallest Wacom tablet.
Well, also,
That's what it is.
And that's another thing, too. Again, the idea of having an actual, like, active stylus on it. The first time that I was using this, and there's the Note app has, like, I don't know if you can see, it has like line grids, right, or actually graph paper. And I'm a big fan of styluses on the iPad because I like to sketch and doodle and that sort of stuff. The first time I'm like, gee, I wonder if I can put a dot right at the intersection of those two. Hey, I can put a dot right at the intersection of those two. I wonder if I can draw a circle that's perfectly centered around that dot. Hey, I can draw a circle that's perfectly centered around that dot. Gee, there's a button at the bottom here that says, please ignore my palm resting on the screen and only take input from the, hey, I can actually put my finger wherever I want because it's only, oh boy. And you have that awful, awful traveling salesman and lonely traveling salesman who remembers his wife, but now he's very lonely and he's in an airport bar, and that woman at the end of the bar is giving him the eyes. Like,
it's good for writing phone numbers down, I must say.
It'd be nice to have a stylus on my iPhone device.
I'm doing that with the iPad Mini and the Pogo Connect now.
So this raises a problem for Apple because, according to Philip Elmer DeWitt writing in Fortune, Apple gets all of its processors for the iPhone, the iPad, the iPod Touch, all the ARM process from Samsung.
For now.
Well, I'm sure Apple would love to change that, but maybe it's not so easy. That Philip quotes RBC Capital's Amit Daryanani, who is an analyst, and Daryanani says it's not going to be easy to switch suppliers. Apple did most of the heavy lifting on the A6 chips in the current iPhones and iPads, designing the processors in-house and then using Samsung as a fab, but paying them to manufacture. But moving to a different foundry would require a complete redo that would take a minimum of 12 to 18 months, cost a fortune, and not produce marketable chips before 2014. So we're talking billions of dollars to make a new fab.
Unfortunately, Apple doesn't have that kind of money. They couldn't. They've actually broken ground.
I would think that this is something that Tim Cook said, well, we got to do it.
Data centers are secret fabs.
The advantage to Apple, obviously, is being able to build something that's very custom, being able to, be very secretive. I think the disadvantage is that there are certain levels of synergy when you're working with a fab company that is working for everyone, that there's a lot of stuff that they're constantly investing in and improving that you know, when you start forking and doing it yourself, you have to be doing all that upkeep yourself. So I think that's the downside for Apple.
Here's the interesting thing. Apparently, according to RBC, Intel has made an offer to Apple saying, we'll build ARM processors. Intel has fabs up the wazoo.
Yep.
We'll build ARM processors for the iPhone if you switch to Intel for the iPad.
And they have the best fabs. I mean, I think they're down to 14 nanometer with the next generation chips. Apple's still at 22.
That's right.
It's really hugely important for mobile.
That's right.
The only thing with analyst stuff, I never believe that their interests are actually aligned with media or with readers. So what they're putting out is quite often designed to serve analyst purposes, and sometimes is already based on the blogs that then later take their statements and rewrite it. So I never trust anything.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And so let's qualify this. This comes from RBC Capital, which is an analyst, and Doug Friedman, and he reported this on Friday that Cupertino's in talks, but no one else has confirmed that, including Intel or Apple.
Right.
You're right. We should always salt those stories when they're from analysts. And just mention that's from an analyst. Yeah, I'm not sure. Analysts are serving their customers and their companies.
Yep.
They're not serving, as you say, media or us or users.
They're using us to service their banks and then their clients.
You know, the interesting thing, though, is that if Apple took it away from Samsung, that would they would take more away from Samsung than the entire ruling from the $1 billion ruling. It would be much more expensive.
If you wanted to punish them, that's the way to do it. But, and I don't think, and you know, by the way, they added the Note 2 to the court case. They're trying to get the Note 2 out of the U.S. I think any jury looking at the Note 2 is not going to say, oh, that's a copy of an iPhone.
Right.
Yeah. I think at this point, there's enough differentiation that it's pretty obviously a different product. Apple owns the page turn, ladies and gentlemen, and it's about time. Nick Bilton writing in the Bits blog. Patent filed by Apple and approved the week of November 16th. The United States Patent and Trademark Office. A design patent titled Display Screen or Portion Thereof with Animated Graphical User Interface. Apple now exclusively owns the page turn in an e-reader application.
Yeah.
I don't think that's so skeuomorphic. I don't think people really care about that, do they? Kindle doesn't bother.
No.
Well, it's here. I'm going to put into screen lock mode because I had to. Okay. Well, anyway, here's how. Google Play book reader app does it, where there's still sort of a
page turn.
So it's not like a corner page, but it's a cool little piece of animation. And do we all agree this is ridiculous?
Oh, yeah. In fact, this is what Nick Bilton says. Yeah, that's right. Apple now owns the page turn. You know, as when you turn a page with your hand, a interface that's been around for hundreds of years in physical form. I swear I've seen similar animations in Disney or Warner Brothers cartoons. This is where readers are probably checking the URL of this article to make sure it's the New York Times and not the Onion.
Yeah.
Well, even there was iOS apps like Classic that did the page turn long before Apple did it in the iBooks. But I think companies, Apple and any other company, just patent everything that comes out of them.
It's automatic. And if the feds say okay, they bought it.
Yeah.
Struck gold. But,
I mean, that is part of the culture to patent everything, but it's in the light of all the legal actions that have been filed left and right, not the least of which from Apple, you hate to see a device like the Note 2 being under any sort of a legal threat for any reason other than it looks and acts exactly like clearly it was stolen from something that Apple designed, which is what happened with the first Samsung Galaxy. That's perfectly fine. Right. But when they start saying that, oh, well, yes, by some phony baloney thing that everybody thinks is ridiculous, we got a patent on turning pages and, hey, what's that? You've actually got a page turning mechanism inside your device, banned. Or at least we'll try to get an injunction against you so that we'll at least not allow you to launch in the U.S. at the same time we're launching worldwide.
Right.
So that's why this is like, oh, man, really?
I'm not sure, but I think that like
radio patents.
When you look at prior art, I think Zinio has been doing this for at least a decade.
Tons of people have. As Renee pointed out, Classic, which is a third-party app, did it before Apple did it. I think you're right, Renee. But it's one of 38 patents granted to Apple in that week alone. So they've got a building full of lawyers.
They're building nuclear bombs. They're just putting their warehouse. Everyone else is building up their warehouse, and they're putting them at each other.
One of the other ones is skin tone aware color boost for cameras, location-based categorical information services, and consistent backup of electronic information. All of these granted.
Patents of mass destruction.
Patents of mass destruction. I think we have a show title.
Unless, unless the plans for the new spaceship headquarters has like a docking bay for time traveling DeLoreans, I think that Apple's going to have problems explaining that yes, we invented all this stuff.
Yeah, I don't. That's the point, is that you can get a patent, but it has to be defended in court.
Yeah.
And you got to convince a judge or a jury that this is legit. And I don't think it's so hard for the opponents to say, really, Your Honor?
Well, and
the page turn, Your Honor?
And as some folks in the in our chat room are pointing out, is that the other issue is that you is that it also protects you against other, you know,
it's defensive.
It's also a defensive thing. Whether you're gonna, you know, you
because you know, if Apple could patent it, so could somebody else.
And then it's less expensive to do the patent than to get into a legal back and forth with a patent troll, even if you're going to win.
And you get the feeling that the U.S. Patent Office would rather just grant everything and let people sue it out than they would stand on
that's how it's grant. That's what it's become, is that essentially we'll grant it and it has to be, you have to prove it in court, which is, I think, not a good system.
I think we should go back to where you have to build every. Remember in the old patent days, we had to build an actual example of what it was going to be. I think that
you couldn't patent math.
You couldn't patent math. You have to have a model, a physical model.
I think that's awesome.
You know what? I think the ultimate solution is. I think that what a wonderful world this would be if the same Apple employees whose job it is to like approve apps were to transfer to the patent office. Because I want them to be the nippers say, oh, I'm sorry, but I'm going to delay this patent for a year and a half. Like, yeah, we rejected it because you put the staple a little bit too high in the left corner. It should be a little bit lower. But you're welcome to refile.
Oh, Arial, wrong font choice. Sorry.
I don't like that gradient.
All right, unfortunately, this duplicates existing features already found in the natural world.
Yeah. Now, but I guess if you're going to allow software patents, what they're patenting is the implementation of a real page turn in software, right? So that's that is not. I mean, the fact that you could do it on a book is not germane. You're duplicating that capability on in a software.
Yeah, but this is where people who aren't lawyers like us get really really hot and bothered about it because you can't we grew up with this naive idea that patents are for people who invent things. and the first question that we all think is, well, they didn't invent turning a page. They looked at a page turn, thought, gee, wouldn't it be cool to do that exact same thing in software, and that's where they got it from. That you could have a software development team that has never used, touched, or heard of Apple before developing a book reader app that does the exact same thing. And just,
they're copyists.
I guess we're just naive.
Let's take a break. Come back with more Andy Iannotko from the Chicago Sun-Times ukulele player extraordinaire, Rene Ritchie. I'm curious if iMore has some new rumors. We'll ask you about the rumors. Lynx, I guess, is the one rumor we haven't really talked about. The next version of OS 10, and also here, Alex Lindsay from Pixel Core. If you're creating a new web space, a new website, a new presence on the internet, can I tell you, the best place to go, squarespace.com. You're going to need hosting, and you're going to want to put software on there that lets you do a content management, unless you plan to hand design in every single page in HTML and all the content, and that's no way to go. So Squarespace is the first place you should go, because Squarespace does hosting, the best hosting ever. It never goes down. Remember during Hurricane Sandy, they were hand ferrying buckets of diesel fuel to keep the generator running on the servers. That's how much Anthony Castellana and crew care. But they also have the best software. The new Squarespace is out, Squarespace 6. And it is very modern. Beautiful templates by beautiful, spectacular designs. But they're also mobile responsive. So when you go to different screen sizes, and nowadays every site has to be able to go to a 3.5-inch screen all the way up to 27-inch screen. How do you do that? Mobile responsive design. The site, in its underlying underpinnings, is designed fundamentally to adapt itself to any screen size. That's why when you, for instance, post a picture on a Squarespace site, they automatically generate 7 thumbnails to have exactly the right size for the right screen. This is why if you're a photographer, you want a portfolio, or a designer, an artist, Squarespace is a great place to go for portfolios. Your portfolio is going to look great, represent you beautifully, no matter what size screen people visit it on. I think that's a real selling point. If you're a photographer who wants to send clients to your site, that site has to look great and has to work great. And Squarespace never goes down, always looks great. I think the best thing to do is to try it. Free 14-day trial. You get 24/7 support. You get all the support you would get as a paying customer. So you can ask all the questions you want. You get to play with all the tools. You don't need a credit card. Just go right now to squarespace.com. Click the yellow Get Started button. You'll choose a template. You can import all your content from existing sites using the main APIs, the Blogger. I think it's Blogger, TypePad, and WordPress API. So those just get imported right in. Including comments, including SEO, including links. There's all the beautiful templates you can choose from. I just think you're going to love it. Now, if you decide, hey, yeah, this is pretty good, you're going to be very impressed by the pricing. They've simplified the pricing scheme. It's much more straightforward than it used to be. A standard subscription is $8 a month when you buy an annual plan.
I know I say this every week, but I always look at that and I go, what?
Well, and this is the one, is this unlimited plan, where you get unlimited pages, unlimited galleries, unlimited blogs, unlimited bandwidth. That means if you suddenly, you know, get tweeted or slash dotted, if everybody goes to your site at once, doesn't matter. Not only will the site not go down, you're not going to pay some sort of premium.
If you're on Squarespace, you won't even know what a slash dot is.
You won't even know
what a slash dot is. Yeah. It'll just happen. What it'll be called is more visitors.
More people.
Yeah.
And by the way, the stats are great to see exactly where that spike was and all that stuff. Unlimited storage, unlimited contributors. When you buy an annual plan, you get the domain name free, so you can register any domain name you want. They also hook it up so that it works seamlessly to go to your Squarespace site. You get an advanced form builder. All of this $16 a month when you pay annually. And we're going to save you even more because if you use our offer code MacBreak12, you get 10% off whatever your first purchase is. So you can save a significant amount of money. It's like a month and a half free. Squarespace.com. I invite you to try it free because I think you're going to be very impressed. And if you do decide to buy, MacBreak12 is the offer code. This is exceptional, exceptional stuff.
It's key to the operation.
The key to the operation, as Mr. Lindsay says. Apple is interesting, is hiring dozens. This kind of goes back to that story about Apple maybe going building their own fab. They've hired dozens of former Texas Instruments engineers and sent them to Israel to work on chips. We knew they'd been expanding their chip stuff, but they've really expanded it quite a bit.
They have Bob Mansfield now heading the technology division.
Yeah. According to sources close to the situation, and this is the Next Web writing, Matt Bryan, Apple's been hiring dozens of engineers from Texas Instruments after TI began cutting jobs from its Israeli development center. Oh, so they were already in Israel. Intel's looking to lay off 1,700 employees. Apple's going,
I think, is it Texas Instruments or Intel?
I'm sorry, Tech TI.
Yeah. Well, I mean, anytime any of these development companies, and good engineers are, good software engineers are very, very hard to find these days. There's not a low, there's not a high unemployment rate in these areas. And I think anytime someone's downsizing, everybody is competing for those engineers.
Good engineers are worth it. Apple started selling unlocked iPhones, GSM
only. That's what
I'm getting. Are you? They did this with the iPhone 4 and 4S. Mm-hmm. They're not cheap. 16 gigabytes, $650. 32 gigabytes, $750. 64. Apple really overcharges for this NAND memory. Because if that's the difference, that's $100 for 16 gigs. Is that right for NAND?
There's a graph. So they make less money on the lowest storage SKU and they make the most money on the highest storage SKU.
Of course.
And most people will buy one of the others and then that averages out their costs.
I get it. It's a profit deal. $850. And of course, you're going to buy the 64 gig because you're Alex Lindsay.
Yes.
$850.
But the thing is that it's now unlocked and I can make decisions about where I'm going to go.
Can I say something?
Yeah.
If you have a Verizon iPhone,
mm-hmm.
the SIM card is also unlocked. So. And you get Verizon's LTE in the U.S., which you won't get on that iPhone 5.
So you can only use AT&T, basically, if you're doing it. And the Verizon one will work.
You could probably use T-Mobile as well because they changed their frequencies.
You just pop the SIM out?
I did. You don't even have to pop the... Well, okay, so here's what you do. With Verizon, yes. You can use it as a CDMA phone in the U.S. with LTE.
Mm-hmm.
You can use it as a GSM phone overseas with its existing SIM, as long as you make sure they put a SIM in it. And yes, you could pop the SIM. It's unlocked. So I'm not sure why Apple's selling these unlocked ones. I think the best deal right now is AT&T. Verizon.
The Verizon.
I don't know what it's like. What's the story in Canada?
The same day, we've had unlocked units available online since launch day. They used to do it in store too, but then you had tons of scalpers every morning. And there'd be 10 or 20 people buying, the same 10 or 20 people outside the Apple store every day buying them and shipping them to other countries. So they only did online orders this year, but the same day they did the unlocked phone in the US, you can now walk into a store and walk out with an unlocked phone in Canada. And it's we only have GSM carriers. Our CDMA carriers, Bell and Telus, switched to HSPA.
Oh, they did?
A couple of years ago,
interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
So it's one phone to rule them all here.
Now, here's the question. The chat room is saying there are even more frequencies available on the Verizon iPhone. So you should check and see what frequencies. Because that's always the part of the issue is you might have a GSM phone, but it has to have the frequencies of, see, you're going to Rwanda, right?
Yes.
So you got to check and see what they're working in Rwanda.
Well, and right now, I mean, like I'm going to London tomorrow, so I just want to be able to use it locally.
London. You know, that's where... Sarah Lane got a 3 SIM card, put that in the iPhone 5. It was unlimited data for, I think it was £30. It was an incredible deal.
I have a 3 portable modem that I use.
That's the other way to go,
London,
sure.
And it works great.
Good deal.
But I have portable modems for many countries.
Now, these unlocked. Go ahead.
We had a bunch of people with a Verizon phone come to Montreal for the Singleton conference, and they were just putting SIMs in, and they had absolutely no problem. It worked fine.
Yeah.
And that's the iPhone 5?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So don't rush out and get that $850 you've Verizon.
Obviously, I have not been rushing. I've been thinking about it
take
slowly.
Take your time.
And I talk about it on the show, and then I'm corrected, and then
Well, I'm not correcting you. I'm just
it's good.
Proposing.
Yes, absolutely.
And by the way, notice there was a 1 week lag for the unlocked if you order online at the Apple store.
Mm-hmm.
But Apple would like you to know there are lots of iPhone 5s in stock ready now for you to go in and buy. They've overcome the supply issues. I don't know if that means they've overcome supply issues or if demand is now matching supply.
Right.
It's more likely that there was a ramped up demand at the beginning that supply couldn't keep up with. But apparently most of the Apple stores surveyed by our friend Gene Munster. I always think of it as Herman Munster. I don't know why, but Gene Munster is an analyst for Piper Jaffray, and he's the guy who goes into the stores. You know, he's the most active Apple analyst, and sometimes he's just wildly crazy.
The Apple television guy.
Yeah. And what did he say about Apple television? Oh, he's the guy who said it should.
The last 3 years,
yeah. We're waiting. Waiting,
Every
Gene.
Day for the last 3 years.
Waiting. Anyway, for some reason, I always imagine him with giant boots. And a kind of a flat head and bolts on his neck going into the store saying, show me sales. I don't know why.
Must be the last name.
I have to meet Mr. Gene Herman Munster. I bet his real name is Herman, and he just calls himself Gene.
And I bet you he doesn't look like that at all.
AT&T.
I imagine him playing the Michael Palin role in the cheese shop sketch. How about Munster? I'll have some of that then. Oh, I'm sorry. That's my name, sir. Herman Munster. Charles Munster.
AT&T, Sprint, and Verizon, according to Mr. Munster, apparently showing 90% plus availability consistently. So if you've been waiting till the iPhone, you could walk into a store and get an iPhone, you can. Even soon in China.
Well, by the way, with the unlocked one, I mean, one of the advantages of doing that is if you are a foreign visitor to the United States and it's not in your market and you buy it, then you don't have to get any kind of subscription and you take it home.
That's who wants it.
Like if I wanted to pay for my flight to Rwanda or Zimbabwe,
right,
and I bought 10 of these and put them in my backpack, I can sell them for 50% more than I bought them for if they're just as unlocked phones.
Not that we'd recommend that.
Oh, I would absolutely recommend that.
That is the way. If you want to take a trip to Africa, you want to enjoy a safari, go to an Apple store and buy 20 iPhones, and you will
be able to pay for the nicest safari ever.
Are we looking at the newest of the growing list of subsidiaries of Pixel Core?
The thought had crossed my mind. Well, and the thing is that in some
is that legal?
No, no. In some countries it is, and sometimes it isn't. So, like if you're going to Rwanda or Tanzania, they don't have electronic. I don't think Tanzania does. I know Rwanda doesn't. It does not have a There is no customs, you know, on imports for electronics, and so
no tariff,
and so they don't care if you're bringing them, if you're bringing electronics into the country. Different countries have different sensitivities about that. So the countries that are trying to grow their IT, for instance, will say there's no tariffs on electronics. They might have it on other things, like for instance in Rwanda, you can't bring a plastic bag in. So don't put your iPhones in a plastic bag, but if you bring them by themselves, you're fine. You know. Other areas you would you might need to hide them in the clothes or just, you know, walk quickly through, nothing to declare.
That would be illegal.
That would be illegal. And they'll frown, quote unquote.
Jeans
frown
and people.
I just don't want to advocate people do something that they could get in trouble for.
You could get a lot of trouble for that. But as I said, but you can in the countries that don't care, they still, like Rwanda is a good example. There is no Apple dealer. There is no one selling iPhones there.
They want people to do it.
And it probably is a status symbol because it's not available by any local.
And there are
local
people with enough money to spend over $1,000 on an iPhone?
There are more. I mean, in any African country, you just have to remember that if you're in the capital, there are the expats.
The son of the president.
Well, and all there's there are plenty of people with a lot of money floating around,
right.
And there's a lot of people that don't have that as well. But there's definitely people who are willing to pay a premium for that kind of thing. So
there's
anyway,
one small caveat with the unlocked iPhones. If you take them to another country and that country doesn't have a network with an LTE deal with Apple, then LTE won't work even though the phone is capable, because Apple recertifies all the LTE networks, and then they flip the bit to enable LTE on the phone. So if you bring it to your carrier, they have the best LTE in the world, but they don't have a deal with Apple, it's going to be an HSPA.
But it'll be 3G, right?
Yeah.
Or HSPA and most of the
Plus,
countries,
which is faster.
Most of the countries that I'm talking
about. Apple's doing 45 new countries this month anyway, so it'll be better soon.
And most of the countries I'm talking about do not have an LTE network, so.
Apple has received its network access license from China, so expect a Chinese version of the iPhone 5. Usually, vendors in China often sell new handsets within weeks of approval. So, maybe by early December, according to the Wall Street Journal, for an iPhone 5. It's a status symbol. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. iPhones are a big status symbol in Africa. I mean, it's
South Korea, December 7th. 50 additional markets through the month of December. Big explosion of iPhone 5s all over the world.
They're good at getting the phones out.
Yep. It's currently in 47 countries. They're going to add another 50. There are only 210 countries. They're halfway there.
Go, man, go.
Go, man, go.
And multiple networks in some countries.
Yeah. Albania, Antigua and Barbuda, Armenia. This sounds like the Olympics. Bahamas, Bahrain, Bolivia, Brazil, Chile, China, Costa Rica, Cyprus, Ecuador, Grenada, Indonesia, Israel. I think we're in Israel. Jamaica, Jordan, Kuwait, Macedonia, Malaysia, Moldova, Montenegro. I'm going to be in Montenegro in September. Bahamas, girl, I want. Then into the Caribbean on December 21st in time for Christmas. Barbados, Botswana, Cameroon. Oh, wait a minute. We should see if Rwanda's on this list. Senegal, the Central African Republic, Egypt, Guinea, Ivory Coast, Kenya, Madagascar,
Uganda, no.
Mali, Mauritius, Morocco, Niger, Senegal, St. Kitts, Santa Lucia, Santa Vincent, the Grenadines, Tunisia. I like saying these names.
No, it's just you're tapping into something very, very old and primal in my childhood as a New Englander, because I'm thinking, come on, say Walpole. Oh, no school, all school, Walpole.
It's a snow day
in my mind, I'm preparing the sled.
School has been, I did that too. You listen on the local radio station, they'll tell you who's got a snow day. And if they say
awesome.
Walpole, you don't have to go.
Walpole?
You were in Pennsylvania. Did they do that?
Yeah, they. I don't know, in Montreal,
it's just automatic. It's like.
Our schools don't close.
Really?
There's no such thing as a snow day. No, we all have winter tires and they clean the giant snow moving machines. You got to get your butt to school.
We had two bus drivers when I went to school it was a little church school one was from London and one was from Minneapolis. And we always rooted when it snowed. If the one from London was supposed to drive, if it flurried, we would have the day off. And if the one that was supposed to from Minneapolis is 8 inches, and we'd still get to school on time.
But you know who still doesn't have the iPhone? T-Mobile. However, they may get it next week.
They don't really want it.
That's what they said. It's a more trouble than it's worth.
You know, the business end of this, they want to be able to do it on their own terms. And, of course, it might be a center of churn for them, as quote unquote. Churn.
Merrill Lynch, analyst, says that they'll get it next week. But GigaOm is saying, man, their network is just, they're not anywhere near compatible with the iPhone's 3G. So at this point, you'd be getting, 2G.
A 2G phone. Yeah.
Phone.
Apple's not adding AWS Spectrum to the iPhone radio anytime soon, and T-Mobile is building out. I mean, last year they famously built out a 3G bubble over WWDC, and now it's in a couple cities. But
15 cities, that's not enough to make. Well, I don't know. We'll see. They're working hard. They already invited people with unlocked iPhones to get SIM cards. Okay. People have reported receiving T-Mobile's HSPA Plus in New York, Chicago. Some of the big metros. Be interesting to see. We're going to take a break. Come back with more. We've got Renee Ritchie from iMore. Oh, I forgot to ask you about rumors. Remind me when we come back. I want to talk about rumors. I don't care what they are. They can be that Steve Jobs is back. He's running Apple.
He never left.
He's in a secret
room.
Tell
me what you bought, Leo, and I'll start a rumor on that.
Yeah. Would you? Because that'll make me feel better. Alex Lindsay from Pixelcore. Andy Anatko from Walpole. Walpole. Say it. How do they say it in Walpole? There's a way of saying it.
Walpole.
Okay.
But Leominster, Worcester, Revere.
Revere.
I like Revere. That's how we out you.
I like Revere. In Australia, there's a town called Cairns, Cairns. Mm-hmm. There's McKay Island, McKay Island. But I was told several times, no, it's pronounced Cairns and Mackay. And then I realized, that's just an Australian accent. you say it with an Australian. So Revere is Revere.
Does that mean it's Pitcairn Island?
Pitcairn Island.
Yep.
Cairns. We're going to Cairns.
Next week on Mac Break, we'll teach you what you do when you get to a rotary. I'm telling you, if you're going to take the VFW Parkway to Chestnut Hill, you got to know what you... Don't be one of them Barneys who just like stop short. I got places to go. I don't have time to school you.
Is that why they call them Barneys? Barneys?
In Somerville. People who clearly are from not here, but not in a mean-spirited way, but just you don't know. When the lady at Dunkin' Donuts points to you, you say, give me a scratch ticket and a Harold and give me a large coffee. Then you step aside and I make my order. You don't look at the tote board. You know, if you don't know what the program is, stand outside. Okay. Barney, the etymology is like as if you just came here from a barn.
Yeah, you're Barney. Were you brought up in a barn?
I'm not sure if it's a derogatory term against Barney Frank, if that is the
No, I don't think. I think you're right. I think it's where you brought up in a barn.
It's like a carny except a Barney.
A Barney. Our show today brought to you by Smile Software. Jean McDonald was on our cruise. We had so much fun. She was smart. She spent an extra month in Australia before and after the cruise. She went back to Portland where she's located the other day. She said she posted a picture of 30% gray on her Facebook page. This is what Portland feels like after being in Australia for a month. 30% gray. She's so great. And
she's awesome.
And I just love Smile's products. You go to smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. You can see all the great products, including brand new PDF Pen, their fantastic PDF program for the iPhone. Now, this is a program that not only lets you open PDFs, there are plenty of programs that do this, but also edit them. You can sign contracts, make changes, fill out applications. It automatically detects the form and lets you fill out the form and more. And it supports both iCloud and Dropbox, so you can move those PDFs around seamlessly from Mac, iPad, and iPhone. You have a library where you can append your signatures, your text, your images, fix typos on the PDFs. I don't know many programs will let you do that. Resize and delete images on the PDF. You can mark up documents, notes, comments, highlighting. They've got arrows, shapes, all the stuff. And it's really easy to use. And it's so cool that it works on the iPhone. And it's only $4.99 for a limited time. So you can learn more if you want to see all the features at smilesoftware.com/MacBreak. And if you want to get it on the phone, go to the App Store, $4.99. But this is a limited time. Oop, it's opening my iTunes. Here it comes. It's a limited time only for $4.99. What a great program. PDF Pen for the iPhone. It's here. It's here. Don't be a banny. Get it. It's really amazing what we can do with the high-res display of the iPhone. It's just really, really sweet. $4.99 for a limited time. Or visit Mac, smilesoftware.com/MacBreak to learn more. And Jean, a tip of the hat to Jean. She's the greatest. She sent us...
cookies?
No, if you want a free copy of this program, she sent me some.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
I'll send it out to you guys as well. Special.
I think I have almost all of them, but hopefully.
I have PDF Pen on everything.
Yeah.
Because it's really convenient. It's really much easier than anything else for things like, you know, when you get a form, I get them all the time for the kid. The kid gets the forms, you know, and I got to fill out the forms. And it's so much easier. It just says, okay, there's a field. So much. I used to like drag stuff around. And, oof. Mr. Eddie Q, ladies and gentlemen, clearly on the Rise Good article in the Wall Street Journal, they call him Apple's rising Mr. Fix-It. So that reorg did a few things, put Johnny Ive in charge of human interface design across the board, but it then took Eddie Q, who was in charge of iTunes, right? Or yeah.
Internet and services.
And of internet services.
He was basically in charge of anything that wasn't working at Apple and needs to work now.
And he is now, man, across the board.
Syrian maps.
Yeah. He's really, really impressive.
If you need to clean up a body, this is the guy at Apple.
You'll pull up in his Ferrari, put the body in.
What was that's in Pulp Fiction, yeah. Right? What do they call him?
Mr. Wolf.
Mr. Wolf.
Yes. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I was on my way to. I was called away from a formal function. That's why I'm wearing this tuxedo.
Mr. Wolf. Eddie Q is Apple's Mr. Wolf.
Not too much pressure on him. Saying, oh, by the way. Every product that's failed and disappointed people is now under Eddie Q's, but and everybody knows it's going to be perfect now in 4 months because Eddie Q is working on it. Like, dudes,
he's firing people.
I got ideas, but dudes,
now
it's really my fault. Now
I did not realize, but he's been with Apple for 23 years. He's been there a long time, obviously that means he was a Steve Jobs man from the beginning. Because he was software and services, he was kind of. Less, you know, more peripheral to the hardware business, but now he's got a job to do. He's the prime architect of Apple's software strategy, and according to the Wall Street Journal, one of the most important product voices at the company. He's senior vice president of internet software and services, iCloud, iMessage.
Rupert Murdoch to launch the Daily a couple years ago.
That's right. Which is just was just canceled yesterday.
They should have hired him longer.
That's right. That was Apple saying, yeah, we think this daily newspaper that Rupert Murdoch is doing for the iPad only, is so significant. We're going to send Mr. Eddie Q, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Wolf will be joining you on stage to clean up.
It was supposed to be Steve Jobs, but then he was ill and they sent Eddie Q instead.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wow. As it turns out, the daily wasn't such a great idea.
I think it just happened this last week.
It got canceled yesterday. I think that, we knew it was kind of coming. They laid off people and so forth. The problem was primarily that it was so expensive. There was no way. They would have to have 500,000 subscribers to be profitable.
I mean, but the problem with not getting to 500,000 subscribers was it was really a pain in the neck to download it. I had it. You know, and the problem was it would take forever to download, and it still wasn't downloading everything. So you'd end up in this, you know, and the biggest problem was is that as soon as Flipboard was released, it was over. Like Flipboard, literally, I think Flipboard killed. Like I really
Flipboard
thought that
predated the daily.
I know
that's
but
why it was weird to release the daily in a world where the Flipboard exists.
Did it really? I mean, yeah. I just didn't know about it until then.
I knew about it, baby.
Right? But I didn't know Flipboard that well, and I don't think it was as. But you know, Flipboard is probably the app that I use more than any other app on my phone, on my iPad.
Gruber said it was really poor execution that killed the daily.
It wasn't.
Yeah,
they didn't know what they didn't know. I don't know. I mean, I thought the content you were, it was a little too, it was, you know, a mile wide and an inch deep and it took a long time to download. That was the issue.
The cost structure was insane.
99 cents a week.
They were spending millions, was it $500,000 burn rate just for every issue?
Yeah.
Some crazy number. And the stuff that's successful in digital usually has more people in front and less people behind.
Right.
And they seem to be more traditional with this huge back end that just would never ever.
Well, I think that they could roll over everybody else by really applying all of that, but it still came out and it's hard to run into anything that's daily, but I think that it was, I think it was like 150 people or something that worked there. And so it was just an incredible number.
I just think that sometimes you see these products where they surgically try to avoid every possible advantage of the medium they've chosen to use.
Yeah.
And this is—I mean, I wish I were saying that as a joke, but that's almost exactly true. Where they said, "Let's not do a weekly news magazine. We'll do it on a daily basis." Oh, so whereas if you did it as a weekly, you'd have the benefit of being selective about not just leaping on every news story, but only choosing the ones that are important enough to read, and also having long analysis. Now you're just simply competing with news that outlets that got it into these people's hands via Flipboard 12 hours before you're able to publish. And let's not do it in a lean way that could be easily transmitted over 3G. Like you said, let's do it in a really, really fat, content-rich magazine format that takes an eternity and a half to download. Every failure is poor execution. I mean, this is where it's like again, it's one of those choose-your-own-adventure books where at the bottom of every page was, do you want your project to be successful or unsuccessful? Unsuccessful? Okay, now turn to page 18. Do you want this project to be successful or unsuccessful? Okay, now turn to page 34. And then, okay, wow, are you dead? You're dead, 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 dead. And people who came up with this idea and implemented this idea and worked on this idea are not even going to mention this on their resumes because it's such an embarrassment.
And they made a lot of good content.
There is no Marvel Comics a year from now telling you that you're actually hiding in a pocket dimension when people thought that you were exploded.
Well, it was great. I mean, they made a lot of good content. There was a friend of mine was actually a producer there working on the behind the scenes for movies, and some of that content which you could find on YouTube was great. I mean, it was just like it was great content, but it was only one little section, and the rest of it wasn't. You know,
and they broke some stories like the Xbox TV console and Office for iPad. But if you look at like the New York Times, they make the New York Times app, and it's a much more they understand digital much better than I think the Daily did. The Daily was still a traditional publication, just distributed to the iPad instead of actually being it was digital immigrant and not a digital native. And you really want that digital native experience.
Well, I don't know how you compete with Flipboard at this point. I mean, the problem is for me is that I don't want to go to like
Flipboard's
my
free.
Magazine. My magazine is the fact that I'm reading all of these content pipes
right.
at the same time, and I'm able to flip between them
right.
and make all of that. It's just such a seamless experience that I use so often that I don't want to download anybody's app at this point to do that. I think that's the problem. It's like the web for content.
Or Wall Street Journal. I think the silo is it's not the pay, because people pay for the Wall Street Journal. I think it's good, too.
I mean, I pay for The Economist. But
I do have to say there's one problem. Well, The Economist is like The Daily in one respect, which is a big download. The New Yorker, too. It's like I want to have it on my iPad, but it takes too long to get it.
The reason
someone
I pay for
print
the
print a PDF.
The reason that I subscribe to The Economist is because it's dictated to me by English women.
Oh, you listen to British voices.
English and
now,
men, too.
Alex, but I'd like to tell you a story.
So the great thing about The Economist and what everyone should be doing, I mean, they literally dictate every single article in The Economist. And I walk around airports.
So you listen to it.
I just listen to The Economist.
How do you do that?
If you get the Economist app, you can download the whole thing, which will take like seconds. And then it says, do you want to, if you're connected to Wi-Fi, which is annoying, it will say, do you want to download it? And it'll take a couple minutes for it to download.
It is, by the
all
way,
all the audio. $82.95.
It is not 10 seconds. Somebody in the chat room saying, oh, cry me a river. You can't wait 10 seconds. No, it's more like 5 minutes. And that's
a for problem. The audio.
Well, no, I'm talking about The New Yorker. I don't know.
Oh, no. The Economist, all the text and everything else comes down really quickly.
It's the media.
It's the media. Well, it's not a lot. There's not a lot of media in it that isn't in the magazine except for the fact that it does all the audio, which does take 5 or 10 minutes to download. But once you download it, if you do that in the morning on a Monday or whatever, you know, you now are walking around listening to
The Economist.
Is this
a newsstand app or is there a separate app?
I think it's now in the newsstand. I downloaded it as an app. I have it as an app. I think it finds its way in. It is.
Because it's expensive, but I've been thinking I would like to get something like that.
It is.
If it goes newsstand, then you get the background downloads, Alex. You'll just wake up one morning and it'll all be there.
It happens automatically.
Yeah. It's
that's another thing the Daily did wrong, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I said, every decision, it was like the managing editor was George Costanza. Every mistake, every choice they made was the wrong one.
The opposite.
But it is a good idea, a basic idea. I think that more, this is going to be like a rise in magazines more than newspapers, anything else. People who can deliver really great content, not even necessarily on a daily basis, because you are going to be competing with everything. Everything's being posted everywhere. But there's going to be room for The Economist. There's going to be room for The New Yorker. There's going to be room for even a Time or a Newsweek, so long as they find a way to sell their product where it doesn't cost a fortune every week to download this thing.
Right.
Just we have to remember, that, or they have to remember, that in their model is that they're not spending a fortune on paper.
Right.
Or delivery.
Yeah, or delivery, right. Or all those other things. And that's something that
they forgot.
Escapes them when they try to charge.
They forgot that part. Minor detail.
That's another problem with perception. I have more knowledge about this when it comes to comic book publishing than all the other magazine publishing. But the amount of expense that goes into the production of that $3.99 comic, so little of it is in the paper, the printing, and the delivery. So much of it is in the creative end of it, and the editorial end, and the company that can put all those elements together to put it out. And so even though we think that it's just a bundle of electrons, this should be 99 cents, they can show you, well, here's how much that we were paying out to produce this thing before we even put it, print it, and put it on a truck. And you realize that, oh, you can't really charge 99 cents for that, or at least not. You can't charge 99 cents and support all the comics that you're giving an extra 3 months worth of chances to before you cancel them.
And I don't know. I think I saw something that with a newspaper, I think a local newspaper like San Francisco Chronicle or whatever, I think it was half. I think half of it. Half it was kind of half and half for a local magazine, which has not got nearly the same, you know,
I would argue is, level of design. If it's half, it's a significant amount. I mean,
I think I thought that it was half and half.
That's not insignificant.
Yeah.
Speaking of comics, Andy, you know the app Comic Flow, right?
Yes.
Do you like that app?
I guess my only vote is that I don't use it regularly.
Then I won't mention what I was going to say, which is we had its creator. Actually, a really interesting guy on Triangulation last week, Paul, Pierre-Olivier Latour. He wrote Quartz Composer. Actually, he wrote it as something called Pixel Shock, mm-hmm. as a third-party app that Apple acquired and acquired him. And if you've ever used Xcode,
Quartz Composer is amazing.
Quartz Composer is amazing. And then he wrote Comic Flow, and he still maintains that. It's a comic book reader. It's really sweet.
Where's
I really
he
like it. He's local because he has a new company called Everpix that is a album. He also worked at Cool Iris for a while, but he's an album product for the iPad that's very, very
like
interesting.
Bay Area or North Bay?
San Francisco.
I'm going to take that guy out to lunch.
Oh, yeah. He's amazing. Young guy, smart. Anyway, he's if you want to find out more, he was our interview on Triangulation last Wednesday, and a really fascinating guy. But I like I've always liked Comic Flow. Yeah.
I'm a crazy Quartz Composer fan.
Yeah.
So
I mean, this guy knows how to – the guts of the Mac, man. Yeah.
I do want to point when I say that I didn't become a regular user. Yeah, that wasn't a comment that it was a bad app. It's just that
right.
I don't think it's as good when you it's great when you have a few comics on your iPad when you're following a number of different series or when you want to put like I want to put the Watchmen here, I want to put the right. different versions of the Fantastic Four here. It's not as good as the organization.
Right. Let us take actually a couple. Okay, I got to do it now. Renee Ritchie, any rumors?
there's the inverse of rumors. I mean, Apple updated so many products
right.
Over the last 3 months.
There can't be anything new.
Yeah, if you're expecting, I think for anyone in the industry, it's going to be very quiet through December. And Apple doesn't go to CES. They don't even go to Macworld anymore. So right. It's probably going to be quiet. There's usually a March event for the big iPad. The big iPad just got updated again in October. There will be an update at some point, probably to give that the new design language that you see in the iPad mini, but probably not, you know, for a significant amount of time. So we might see the new version of OS 10 previewed early in the year, and then WWDC will be iOS 7.
Are they going to go to yearly? I guess they are at yearly. Are they at yearly?
Yep. They're yearly updates for OS 10 and iOS now.
So we just kind of know that there'll be some because it's yearly.
But there'll be TikTok updates. Like they'll do the right. small update and then the large one.
Are we on a tick or a talk? Mountain Lion was a tick, I would say.
Yeah, yeah. I believe
in other words, a big update. So so Lynx, if that's what it's called, will be a lesser update.
Well, it's almost like Intel, where they say you get the new architecture, then you get the die shrink. With Apple, you get the new goodies, and then you get those stuff made good.
Then you get the fixes.
Yeah. When will
Lion fixed a lot of Lion?
When will they do a 5S? Will it be the fall?
Yeah, probably.
Everything's gonna be fall now, right?
If they don't go to a multiple phone option, which you never know with Apple. You always right. say Apple would never do this just the day before they actually do it. Then you're looking at, because that's just how their model works. They make so many phones, it takes them a while to pay down all that development.
Right. Right. So we don't have to worry about a 5S. I think we've had enough new iPads to last, I hope.
I think
Apple. A 5S rumor, just to say that Apple would fix some of the manufacturing things that caused lower yield rates and maybe some of the scuffing issues, and they would push that out early. But if they do that, it'd probably be something more like the Verizon iPhone 4, where it's, you know, a very stealthy update.
So now Cheeto's pointing out that if you talk TikTok, leopard was big, snow leopard small, lion would be big, mountain lion small. So would lynx be a big, and then they do snow lynx?
I think since they went to the yearly updates, though, it's not going to be as pronounced. It'll just be the new stuff, and then the new stuff.
It's a bunch of talks.
Yeah.
No big ticks anymore.
And we have a show title.
Until Alex gets his one unified grand.
Well, I think my big
the
theory
Mac
is
Pro
that
is what we're waiting
I think OS 10.11 is the unified interface.
It's the iOS, the back.
I think that's what moves as we groomed. I don't think that there's going to be. I think 11 is when they're both the same. They may operate differently in different platforms, but they will be the same operating system at that point. That's my guess. And I think Apple's going to release the big Apple TV on the Monday of CES without actually going, and then no one will talk about CES.
That would be January 6th, 7th, something like that. Yeah. That'd be soon.
Yeah. Yep. That's my rumor.
Mm, 1 month for an Apple TV. That's a good rumor. How about a Mac Pro? What? Any rumors floating around there?
No.
End of the year.
End of 2013?
According to Tim Cook, that email he sent out that said we're working on something for the end of 2013.
I don't know. All I got to say for that is that the new 27-inch iMac, whenever it's released, is coming out at the end of the year and has two Thunderbolts and is 32 gigs of RAM is the max. Even I don't know if I need
this new iMac Pro anymore. You can get it now. You can order. There's already been some teardowns. They've changed a little bit the way the 21-inch iMac is laid out. This is from believe it or not from iFixit, from a Japanese enthusiast site, Kodo Wasari, Warisan.
I wonder if they got enough ads to take something apart that they'll never get to use again.
21-inch iMac appears to require only suction cups and a spudger. That's all you need, folks. All you need is suction cups and a spudger, and you're good to go.
Also good show title.
I know. We're rife with good show titles.
The 21 inch is kind of weird though. Like I've had one for a few days now and looks great. Also, I love to just research and get an article on how much work they put into the magic trick of making it look much thinner than it actually is, because it's like, when you look at it head on, it looks absolutely no different from even like the 2008 era iMac that I have in my office over there. But when you turn it to the side, it's like, oh my God, it's like almost as thin as a plate of window glass. And it still looks thin, still looks thin, still looks thin, still looks thin. And you finally get to this extreme angle. We can start to see the bulge at the back of the screen where, okay, so I can see that it's actually just really, really thick in the middle. But the curve that defines the back of that thing to make sure that you can be walking all around the office and get really to almost behind it before you realize how thick it actually is, that must have taken a lot of research and a lot of effort.
I think it's mirrors myself.
They had physicists.
Smoke and
mirrors. Glossy, the glossy surface display. But you've all been reading about like all the things that are not present on this thing, and you know, not just the DVD drive, but non-upgradable RAM. With the explanation there being that, well, we sort of max it out to 8, so that switches
for the 21, right? Because the 27 there's a compartment
exactly.
That can pop out.
That's only true in the 21. They also one thing they deleted only from the 21 inches that you can no longer just like do that trick. You sort of like jab a credit card in the base of the pedestal and detach the base entirely, and then mount it like on an ISA display arm or something like that. So this is going to be locked to that stand.
Oh,
like,
that's too bad. Yeah, because we've done that with my old iMac. We have it's a Visa, so I have an arm.
Does the 27 pop out?
Yes, it does.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I don't have a 27, but I've been told that this is only something that they've removed from the 21.
So 21 is really more of a consumer device.
It's like the MacBook Air by Macs.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the big one is the one you want if you want to do things like put more memory in or put it on an arm.
I still think the 27 is now the new Mac Pro. I mean, I don't know. I don't see how. I mean, when you look at the specs on it.
I think I should order a 27 just to find out. Don't you think?
Do it, Leo, for the good of the Twit universe.
John's been wanting me to do that. Maybe I should replace that thick iMac in my office. It's so thick with a nice.
Just makes you want to puke.
It just want to puke. But I have to be able. But we have an Ergotron arm, so it has to have a Visa mount in the back. I have to be able to pop that out.
You can do that. You can do that on the 27. Can't do it on the 21. Right. Just make sure.
And by the way, iFixit does have its teardown. I apologize. They now have their teardown up as well of the 21 and a half inch.
They really tore it down. They didn't just open it up.
They tore it down. They broke it apart.
Nothing left.
There's your spudger, which looks strangely like a guitar pick with the iFixit logo on it. And special suction cups. iFixit does this all for free, but then they sell the tools so you can do it too. Then we did the suction cup. Colleen Kelly, we had to replace a hard drive in my old 27-inch iMac, and she, on camera in the old Twit Cottage, used a giant suction cup, and it works. There's nothing holding that glass in there.
That's kind of scary.
Well, it won't fall out, but it's once you take the back off. Yeah.
And just remember that the legacy of this goes back far, far, far. Remember even the first Mac. You needed to have not only a T15 Torx screwdriver, but a special oddball, like really, really super long one to get at the screws that were buried deep, 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 deep inside the handle to prevent you from getting at them. Then you needed a special tool to pry but this is before the days of having spudgers. At that point, we'd had to use a piece of plastic with a bunch of leverage.
I love it. One of the things...
The red car in Los Angeles costs just a nickel. But yeah, I mean, this isn't exactly the first Mac they've made where it's like, oh man, Apple, why do you not want me to see what color wire you put on the transformer?
They do. I like it. iFixit offers wallpaper, 1920 by 1080 wallpaper of the internals if you want to use that for your Mac. I'm definitely putting that on the iMac. Here's what's inside. They said completely laid out completely differently from last year's iMac.
Yeah.
That makes sense. I mean, if you look at what they got to fit it in there, it's not easy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why you give them sort of a buy on moving the SD card slot to where it is.
Sure.
Because if you've already established as an engineer that this is how thin the edge can be, and we're not allowed to put a bump out anywhere to accommodate that connector, it's like all the it's not like this a big TV tray full of electronics. Everything is designed to fit inside that bump out, and so okay, there really is no other place to put that slot than right where the rest of the inputs are.
I'm particularly interested in step 16, which iFixit calls stop speaker time. He says the speakers may look simple, but removing them is nerve-wracking for seemingly no reason other than to push our buttons. Apple has added a barb to the bottom of the speaker assembly that makes them harder than necessary to remove.
Riccio is going, I'm gonna give it to iFixit this time. I'm putting a bar here. I'm gonna get the
show you. There's a barb.
So I don't know if you remember, but in one version of iOS firmware, Apple decided to play a little joke on all the bloggers and put like iPhone 10.3 and just a whole bunch of crazy product names.
Good for them.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
I wonder how long, like in the manufacturing process, wait a minute. Right now, this part has like screw you, iFixit actually molded into it. Remember, we're supposed to remove that.
Hey, Kyle Weens, this is for you.
Far too easy to fix. We got to change that.
That's pretty funny. I love iFixit. Let's see. I'm just quickly run through any other stories we want to get in here before
Email 2.0, Leo.
Say again?
Email 2.0 for iOS just came out.
Email 2.0 for
Gmail.
Gmail 2.0. Oh, I've been waiting for that.
Yep.
Is it iPad and iPhone?
Yes, sir.
And what's new?
It is totally redone. You can have multiple accounts. It's got a whole new interface. Google's really stepped up their interface game. I don't know if the Sparrow guys are involved in this, but Google.
That's right.
They
bought Sparrow.
And it has instant RSVP. It has easy search. It is a far better app than it was 10 minutes ago.
Well, that's so 10 minutes ago.
Amazon also released a new version of the Kindle app for all iOS devices. The main thing they added is now it has X-ray support, which is their feature where if you're reading like Lord of the Rings and you forgot, is this person an elf, a gnome, a hobbit?
What race is this?
Right, where it's like essentially having like a condensed Wikipedia for like here's where all the characters are and here's where you're going to see this person go from that place to that place, which is a cool feature on a lot of I use it a lot on these epic books where it's like I wish I had the sort of brain where I could remember who Gollum used to be before.
Yeah, Game of Thrones, you definitely. In fact, there's an iPad app we talked about the other day for Game of Thrones just to understand who you. And it's cool because they have a slider, so there's it's a no spoiler slider. So as you read the chapters, you just slide the slider to the right, so you learn more because you don't want to learn too much about a character too soon, right? All right. I think we're good. We're good to go. Griffin launching Lightning connector cables next week. That's good news. All right. Let us take a break. When we come back, we'll have more with Renee Ritchie, Andy Iannacco, Alex Lindsay, as we continue to dissect, parse, and analyze the world of Macintosh. This portion of our show brought to you by Hover.com. I am hearing more and more from people who have made the switch to Hover, how happy they are they did this. Nice Canadian company, Renee Ritchie. Hover is actually, it's part of Tucows. And Tucows had a domain registrar before. Domains, I can't remember the name of it. But Hover is like their 2.0 version. And it's fantastic. Hover really is all, I mean, Tucows is really all about finding a business where they really could make an improvement and doing it. If you go to macbreak.hover.com, you can find out about the simplification of domain registration and management, by the way. Easy to use, friction-free domain name management tools. Clean, simple interface. Honest. No upselling. No aggressive, you know, pushing or cross-selling. And great, I mean, literally, great phone support. That's something that's disappearing these days. When you call Hover during business hours, you will not be put on hold. The rep will get you through it. And I can't tell you how many. And by the way, they have very good online help and support documentation and tutorials as well. You don't have to call, but if you ever do call, you'll be very happy that you did. They're nice. They're effective. Here's the deal. Go to macbreak.hover.com, and you'll save 10% off your new domain name when you use our offer code MACBREAK, M-A-C-B-R-E-A-K. Very simple. They have 23 top-level domains, .com, .net, .org, .tv, .pro, .mobi, .biz, lots of country codes, .ca, .asia, .us, .uk. Just a great company with great service. So when it's time to register a new domain name, or if you think that you perhaps want to have a registrar that is responsive and effective, transfer your stuff over to Hover.com. They've got a great concierge service for transferring. You pay $10 for the transfer, but you get a full year extension to whatever the domain names you're transferring over are.
I love the fact that you can see all the different pricing for ones that someone else has already bought and made available.
Yeah, that's cool. What do they call that? There's prestige domains or something like that. Yeah, I really like it. This is where all our domains are now. Took me a while to move them over there because those other guys are sticky.
Yes.
They don't want you to give up. Hover.com, H-O-V-E-R. Go to macbreak.hover.com and use the offer code MACBREAK to save 10% on your domain registration. And if you, you know, this isn't in the ad, but I'm pretty sure if you say to them, hey, Leo sent me, would you mind terribly just taking all my domains and moving them for me? I think they'll do that for free. They will happily. Normally they charge for their concierge service, but I think they'll do that for you if you say, Leo sent me. I want to mention our Twit mugs. They're selling like hotcakes, but that's because there's only 5 days, 4 hours left as we record. Teespring.com/twitmugs.
They look awesome.
Well, just between you and me, this is going to be the... We created these as the gifts we were going to give our hosts. We do this every year. And so don't buy one.
But, I was about to go up there. Leo saw it happening. He saw my fingers like, I'm going to go get one of those.
But... we thought, hey, maybe people would like these. There, you get two mugs for $20. You have your choice. There's two kinds. There's a 16-ounce, pretty standard mug. It's got the gorgeous color mugs with the Twit logo, the orange gear, the Twit logo inside, and the matching orange liner. But they also have a spoon mug. Lisa said, I love the spoon mug, so we did the spoon mug, too. This is a 9-ounce mug that has a spoon holder in the handle and a matching spoon.
Kawaii.
You can get one of each or two of one, your choice, for $20. And we're going to talk about it on Inside Twit tomorrow because I think we're raising money for something, but they haven't told me. We've actually sold 727 already. Wow. I'm stunned.
Because a lot of the smart people are buying two of the ones that have the spoon, because you can just imagine 50 years from now on Antiques Roadshow is the host saying, you know, this was supposed to come with a spoon. If you still had the spoon, this would be worth $20,000, as is still very collectible, $800 to $900.
You don't lose your spoon.
And it's just not the same if you print it on a 3D printer.
No.
These were actually created without a 3D printer, which is, I know for many of the younger viewers do not understand what that would look like.
Well, that means it doesn't dissolve in hot tea, for one thing.
It doesn't kill you by fumes when it gets above 90 degrees.
Teespring is TEESpring.com. It's teespring.com/twitmugs, all one word. You get two mugs for $20. And I think that's a nice choice. I don't know about international delivery. They did that last time, did they not? I can't remember what the deal is. Somebody will know. Somebody will know. And don't be thrown if it says, thanks for buying a T-shirt on the checkout. Apparently, they forgot to, because mostly they sell T-shirts, so they forgot to change the, neglected to change the text. I'm going to like this on Facebook. Here we go. Bye, bye, bye. Time for our picks and tips. And we haven't done an iOS or a Lion tip in a while. I don't know if you guys are prepped to do such a thing. What, first of all,
I'm not prepped.
You have a Zag case on your iPad.
I do.
Do you like that better? We've tried both the Logitech Ultra Thin iPad.
I have lots of those.
Cover.
So I, for a while, all my iPads had the Logitechs.
Yeah.
Problem is they'd slide off.
It's not a great case. It's a good keyboard.
It is. And so I saw actually someone on a plane with this, and I asked them what it was.
This is the Zag.
And this is the Zag, and it's great. I mean, I really like it. I like the fact that it's a better case. It latches. It does create a little bit more bulk to it, but it really just makes it like a laptop at that point.
Fold it up so we can see it.
So if I
So really, it's a full case at this point. You've got cover all the way around. And that's the only problem with the ultra-thin PC from Logitech. It slips off.
And people ask, like, okay, so why would you use this other than just getting an 11-inch iMac, right? I mean, or 11-inch Air or whatever.
Right.
Because it's about the same, really the same mass. It's actually heavier than an Air.
You're kidding. Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, with this whole thing is actually heavier than an Air and probably a little bit larger. But I like the touchscreen.
Right.
You know, this is like my Air with
an Air with a touchscreen would be a great little thing.
Yeah, but I like the touchscreen. I like being able to go back and forth, and I like being able to, it's not very hard. So I pull this out, and it's very sturdy. So when you pull it out here and I lock it in, it's a very, you know, very sturdy setup. And when I want to just use my iPad, I simply just, you know, this is what I like, is that it's sturdy, but I just pull it right out, and it's out. You know, it's not this long, drawn-out process. And so I really like the Zag. It's not my pick for the week, but it is a pick.
This one is the...
That's great.
Is the Zag Folio? Is that what it's called?
I didn't even see the Plus.
They have some new ones now. Yeah, this is there's the Zag Keys Pro Plus, but that looks more like an ultra thin.
That looks like look like a Mac with a touchscreen.
Yeah,
But that looks more like it. See, I like the fact that this wraps around it.
This is the Zag Folio.
Yeah, I like the Zag. The Zag Folio is what I have.
$100,
and I like it.
Yeah, but that's not your pick of the week.
No.
What is your
So Andy was having trouble, and we were trying to figure out what was going on with his connection. It turned out to be nothing, his Mac or whatever. But I was thinking about, you know, what we need to get Andy if this isn't working, if it happened to be his USB connection.
Yeah, what would we do?
And I thought I'd show we have a lot of need for USB connections. This is not I've been pretty nice. I've been doing like lots of cheap stuff.
This is not cheap. It looks well. First of all, I can tell it's not cheap because it's built like made out of steel.
Yeah. So
now that I know that it's not cheap, I should tell you that I actually ran upstairs, got a replacement computer because this one that I normally have here, it was definitely the USB. So
that's interesting.
Okay. So now this is a USB interface, and
I'm lying, of course. It's cheaper than a new computer. No, actually, it may not be. How much is it?
Oh, this is about $600.
Okay, it's cheaper than a new computer.
So it's
You should definitely send me one of those.
So yeah, this is so for those of you who really need to do audio. There's just a lot of people that don't, you know, that are still messing around with the little toys. And if you really need to get audio in and out of your computer, this is the Swiss Army knife. This is a Sound Devices USB Pre 2. And the thing is, so here's the deal: is you've got mic inputs here. You've also got line inputs, and these are all what we call balanced, which, you know, is the way our entire pipeline works. Is a balanced. It just means that it's going to have a lot less noise and not less buzz and all kinds of other stuff. Doesn't always mean that, but it generally does. But you also have, you can, you know, hook up little your little RCA connections too. Importantly, if you're doing outputs, you're trying to figure out how to hook into a professional system. You have balanced outputs that come out of here, just XLR connections, as well as Toslink and SPDIF out of here, which is kind of insane. And then you have a lot of control over all of these things in the front. So so you have, you know, individual control over there, the inputs, your preview, and then there's a lot of extra stuff that they even stuffed into it via dip switches and stuff. So there's a lot of ways to customize it. It is... I don't show up at events that need audio without a couple of these in tow, because it is like the Swiss Army knife of getting audio in and out of your computer. So this isn't for everyone. This isn't everybody's solution. It also has limiters, by the way. So for those of you who need limiters, what that means is you'll never peak. So you'll never have that ugly when someone's. So there's limiters built in. They're 20-to-1 limiters. You're not going to peak it. You know, so it might sound a little warm if you're hitting it too hard, but it's not going to. You're never going to peak this this input, which is why we started getting them, and now we have.
I hate input peaking.
Yes, and it doesn't happen on this guy. And that's why we got it originally. It is, like all the other sound devices stuff, it's a great little piece of hardware. So anyway, I was thinking about USB because of Andy's little issue, and I thought that might, and I realized I had not recommended it, and we have, I don't know how many of these right now, 20 of them or something. So,
and they're not even a full Alex. It's only a 0.67 Alexes.
Oh, I think it's like a 0.9.
0.9 Alex. That's exactly what it is. 0.9 Alexes.
Yeah, and it's, but it's,
it's just beautiful though.
Yeah, it's great, and they're really. I mean, these things get carried all over the world for us, so they're they get banged up, slammed, and it's just made
metal knobs.
Yeah, and look at this. Look, push the little one. The little ones, push in them. They pop out.
Ooh.
See, look at that.
And then you can...
That's your output. And then you have the fader that goes back and forth between monitoring the PC and the... And, it's just really, really, really well thought out.
Even these do little things.
Those are your selectors.
Well, we will not be sending these to hosts.
I think you need to send one of those just for safekeeping.
You're getting mugs.
God forbid, like your luggage gets lost, and you'll know that Andy has one of mine that I could then he'll send to me.
Yes.
Offsite backup, Alex. I can't recommend highly enough offsite backup for any device that you like that costs more than $500.
We need one of these for the iMac.
High availability.
Okay. Yeah, why don't you get one for me? We're using a $20 Griffin iMic.
This is better.
This is better than the iMic.
Yes, it's better. Well, and it's so great if you actually are working in this industry
I'm not working in this industry.
I'm just saying when you're working in like an event industry and you talk to the guys and they go, so how are you going to get us the audio? And when you can say, I can give you a balanced output from either mine or mic from an XLR or TRS,
they know they're dealing.
Down, they
realize they're dealing with the professionals.
You actually know that that's important. and so anyway,
I have an iMic.
Yeah, so these are great, and so I would.
$849 list, so it's more than an Alex.
But it's not what it costs, though. I think it costs.
That's the list.
Yeah, I think the B&H cost is like $670 or something.
Make it so, John. Get me one. You have to talk to Lisa. Okay, we're gonna sell a few mugs. Maybe that's what the mugs are for.
Leo's mug money's going.
There goes the mug money. Boom out the door. Hey, yada. Alex Lindsay, thank you so much for spending my money.
My pleasure. You spend a lot of mine too, because I'm waiting for you to do your recommendation so I can purchase whatever that was.
You're gonna know what my recommendation is in just a moment. But first, Renee Ritchie from iMore.com.
There's this new. For a while now, there's been a way to do aftermarket color changes on iPhones because Apple only does white and black iPhones. And some people have swapped parts. They've gotten aftermarket parts. Some people have painted them. And there's a new thing that's just started, I think, yesterday or today called AnnoStyle. And what they do is they strip off the anodized color that Apple puts on and then they re-anodize it with your choice of a whole rainbow of colors. And where Apple, I think, does two layers of anodization, they do four. They do military grade I don't know if the right word is anodization, but that's what they do. Military grade, four layers. They can install protectors on it. They do iPhones.
That is gorgeous.
It looks fantastic. I mean, you can get the Iron Man red and gold version. There's a whole purple and green version.
How much?
And they just look fantastic. I believe it's $250 or something like that. So it's not an Alex.
You know, if they're selling a lot of these, though, it really might say something to Apple about the fact that people want something besides black and white.
And these are really, these aren't flat colors. These are really, knock you down and make you notice them sort of colors. And they do every area that's usually the aluminum part on the iPhone.
It's the status symbol for the status symbol.
Mm. Well, I mean, several people I've seen on Twitter already have them, and they get a lot of questions about them. So they're definitely, I think, trendy at the moment.
Trendy.
They look awesome.
Beautiful.
People won't take yours by accident, I'll tell you that. Well, they'll take it on purpose.
Mm-mm.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's nice. Very nice. Your pick of the week, Mr. Andy Notko.
My pick of the week is BBEdit, which is a text editor that all of us use and love, has just come up with another big, big update to 10.5, just released today, a free update for everybody.
Oh, good. I just bought 10.
Exactly. Well, send me the $49 that you were going to spend on the new update, and we'll work something
good,
out.
Good.
It's, in a way, like, Bare Bones is the most, like, non-Apple, non-Mac company ever, because, you know, we just got through talking about how Apple removed features from iTunes by making the latest update. Update after update after update, they don't, the BBEdit does not have features deleted from it. With 10.5, the worst that has happened in any situation is that they've taken a feature that has been, like, sort of buried under menus and found a better context in which to present it, or taken something to trim down the interface, but that feature is still there somewhere. It's just been taken away from where it's going to distract you from what you want to do. And I've only I haven't spent as much time working with it as I might have, but I've already found it's added so many little bells and whistles. Bells and whistles features, cleaner interface, much nicer to look at. It's been updated to support Retina Max now, so you'll get that cool, incredibly nicely done text. Two features that I immediately found were, I often use BBEdit to edit like CSS files and HTML files, and because I'm a dope when it comes to editing like HTML, I'm always just like zipping top, bottom, and middle to get to one place to another, to another, to another. Now it will sort of, it's always had a feature where you can sort of bookmark certain parts of a document. Now it sort of realizes that, oh, he keeps coming back to the header tag to make edits there, so I'm going to sort of put a soft bookmark right there automatically. So after like a few minutes with the document, there's this automatically populated pop-up so I can instantly teleport to where I want to go. Or I'm designing a new layout for the blog, and I keep changing my design for like the header, but that's already been like embedded in the code. And so now it's every time I embed something like as an image with an image tag, there's now a contextual menu that says normally when I, as soon as I use the image tag, it will like automatically look at that file and make sure that I've got the dimensions automatically embedded there for me. Now, if I do a contextual selection on it and click, it will say, it will give me the opportunity to rescan that file and adjust and resize it because I've just made it larger instead of smaller. Just all these tiny, tiny little details that make the simple idea of typing ASCII text in the form of code that a computer will then tell me is no damn good for any good purpose so much nicer, so much more streamlined, and so much more pleasant.
BBEdit 10.5, free upgrade. Good. Because I just, I'm
going $50 if you're daft and you haven't bought it yet.
And Retina Ready,
I use it for everything. Almost everything I write starts in BBEdit.
Really? Even your columns and stuff? Huh?
Yep.
Cool.
Offline safety.
I just got this, and I haven't had a whole lot of time to spend with it, but already I can tell you I'm going to recommend it. This is Rick Smolin. You may remember him from A Day in the Life. He's got a new book called The Human Face of Big Data. There's also an iPad app that goes along with it, which I haven't tried, but I'm sure will be beautiful. So Rick is a photographer, and his Day in the Life series was, you know, here's a day in the life of a town, a city, and so forth. They even did one where you could put your picture on the cover of it and so forth. But this is just gorgeous, big coffee table book. I'm sure it's expensive, $50, worth it. It'd be a great gift for somebody. And what I love is that it's about big data. So it's about a lot of the topics that we think of and talk about all the time. For instance, here's a thing about Waze, which is here's a Google self-driving car. Here's space. Here's what we put in a recycling. But anyway, it just goes on and on and on. The idea is that someday soon, everything in the world, every bit, every item, every object, even ourselves will be spewing data, the intelligent sensor mesh. And this talks about what big data can mean and what it's meaning today, how it is already being used.
I told you you'd get me back.
Just a gorgeous book. Just a gorgeous book. $50 for a beautiful book like this is not bad.
I'm definitely getting it.
They're talking here about the DNA sampling, you know. The Library of Alexandria. Look at these people. Brewster Kahle. This is all the stuff we talk about all the time. And I have already sent a note to our producer for Triangulation that we got to get Rick Smolin on. He's just down the road a piece. I've known Rick for years. The Human Face of Big Data just came out yesterday.
Yeah, I was sitting next to a geneticist that's working on designer drugs and really that that I was just thinking about it when they're talking about really getting to a point where they prescribe you the correct drug because they know that all those side effects that they talk about. You have a DNA chip that you just show them.
Like, this is what it'll do.
And they go, oh, well, people with that DNA, that DNA combination, they're the one that has the, suicidal tendencies when they take this drug, that kind of thing. And it's
good to know.
Like a fascinating subject.
Yeah. Companion iPad app as well. Might want to check that out. The book.
What is the companion iPad app? Is it the book or is it something that's
a good question.
Added?
I think it's the book. So for those people who are iPad users,
that would be me.
Would you check that out? It's called
I'm
Human Face of Big Data. It's from Against All Odds Productions, and it's in bookstores today. I think it'd be a great holiday gift.
Yes,
for parents too, because it's really it's not a geek book. It's about what all of this means.
Well, and it's Rick, so it's going to be pretty.
Yeah, oh,
it's and gorgeous. It's now hopefully he'll do like a Nova on it. That'll be
Wouldn't that be cool? Actually, it's being delivered today by the publisher, so it just came out. You might have a hard time finding it in bookstores. We're looking at the iPad app right now. Yes, free.
It's
free.
Free.
It's a viewer app, so probably there's in-app purchases for the content for the book or something like that. But at least you get the app for free.
This is the companion.
Renee Ritchie, thank you so much for being here from iMore.com, our newest regular on iPad. Mac Break Weekly. What's the name of this show? A Mac Break Weekly. Thank you for being here. What is it?
This is so smart. You can point your device at certain identifying images in the book, and it will launch additional content.
It's an augmented reality browser.
Whoa. Okay.
See, there's a little green key on some of the images. I'm seeing that now.
Man.
See, so there's a little green key.
Augmented reality.
So you want to know, more about this image? You point your.
It's got a little key, and so you point the little key at it. Oh, that is saucy.
Talking about Fitbit on that page.
Whoever thought of that, you're smart.
Smart, I gotta say. Well, and also credit to Jennifer Irwitt, who was his co-author and I think did the text on that. That's it for Mac Break Weekly. Thank you, Renee Ritchie, for being here. We'll see you next week. Is it snowing yet in Montreal?
It is snowing, but it's not staying on the ground. It's snowing and melting at this point.
Okay, so you have to keep going to school.
Yep.
even if it's sticking on the ground. You guys are tough. You're hardened.
We put on the chains, we tear up the roads, and we make fun of Americans who stay home when a millimeter of snow hits the ground. Yep.
Oh, a millimeter, this would close this place down.
Yeah.
It rains, it closed down.
What is going on out
there?
The last time the schools closed that I remember is when we had no power for 3 or 4 days. They sent the kids home finally.
There's no heat, I guess, after a week or two, it starts to get chilly.
Well, you can take those kind of risks on the road when you've got socialized medicine. All right, Renee?
Yes.
The rest of us tend to be a little bit more cautious when there's black ice on I-95.
You can find Andy Iannacco in the Chicago Sun-Times and also on his website, CWOB.com. And, of course, here every Tuesday for Mac Break Weekly. Great to see you, Andy.
Good to see you guys.
Thanks for being here. Alex Lindsay is probably hitting the road. Are you going to be back next week?
I need
training with my big green egg.
So I'm working on being available. I'll be in New York next week.
Can I Skype you with my big green egg questions?
Yes. Definitely. Send me emails. I don't understand. But, but it's a pretty simple thing to do. But you have to do the beer butt chicken.
Beer butt chicken.
It's all about the beer butt chicken.
On the big green egg.
You should do a show about the big green egg.
Could. It's beautiful,
big green
though.
Egg weekly.
It's heavy. I actually manhandled it.
You'd have a lot of viewers. There's a lot of people with big green eggs.
Half
in
our
your
chat
audience.
Room.
See, this is that crossover. This is the crossover video,
Yeah.
Big green eggs. Synergy. Disruption. Saying.
This week in big green eggs and ham. Thank you all for being here. We do Mac Break Weekly, 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 1900 UTC because of the time change on twit.tv. Watch live. We love having you in the chat room. It's very helpful. And if you can't, you can always get on-demand versions of all of our shows, audio and video, from everywhere, iTunes, any of the iPad apps, podcast apps on any of the devices, or just directly from our site, twit.tv. But do subscribe, that way you'll get it automatically. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next week. Now, what?
If you help us,
best
we're asking
of time.
Viewers, yes, to help us pick what your favorite moments of Mac Break Weekly were. Head on over.
Surely you don't want these fine people to work on the week of Christmas. Actually, Christmas is a Tuesday, so they'd be working Christmas Day and New Year's Day. What are we going to do about New Year's Day? We got to figure that one out.
Yeah,
maybe we'll do a special the year ahead. rumors, and more rumors. And Renee can do it.
Sure.
Because you don't celebrate New Year's in
Canada. No. It's a month earlier than you get
because of the earlier harvest.
If you have suggestions, twit.tv/best of. It says required. You need to know the program name, the episode number, the time code, and why your name. No, none of that.
We just sent off an email that says
none of that's required. It's just
by the time you download, it may be gone.
Whatever. It's a Google spreadsheet, and I think we could probably fix that. But anyway, whatever you do know, give us.
It would make it a lot easier if you put that stuff
in. Well, if you knew the time code, but who knows the freaking time code?
But put in like an hour into the episode or near the end.
Yeah.
I mean, that'll help.
Near the end. Yeah, actually, just, rough location.
Rough location is so helpful.
Just think of the poor slob, Chad Johnson, who has to go through this and find these quote highlights.
So we're all getting together, Thursday to record those. Remember that time when Alex came back from Rwanda and he was telling us all about iPad
syncing. Exactly. And you have to wear a sweater vest.
In the fireplace.
If you've got a
pretend that we all got locked in the storage room and we're waiting for the security guy to come out of
bed. Well, that's a good one. Haven't done that one yet. Thank you, Andy. Thank you, Alex. Thank you, Renee. Thank you for being here. Now get back to work. Break time is over.